All right, let's look at our Project Esther. Project Esther. Now, I don't think that Project Esther is the sole operation of the Heritage Foundation. The Heritage Foundation is a think tank. In other words, they are a group that comes up with ideas for policies that are to be deployed by the government, but they are not the ones that deploy them themselves. They're the idea makers. The government and powers that be then take these ideas, put them into policy, and make them law, and then run with it, right? They themselves don't have any power other than to come up with the prescription. Now, I think there's a lot of good reason to believe that they were tasked with coming up with a solution to the anti-Semitism problem. Now, if you've been alive in the last year, you noticed that anti-Semitism made a big turn. Big leftward turn. That was my right hand, but you know what I mean? It's a mirrored image, so you get the idea. Made a big left turn, right? Okay. Now their worst fear comes true, where it's not anymore just a thing that they get from the extreme right. Now it's a thing that they get from the far right and the far left, squeezing them in the middle, just squeezing them right in the middle. When it's just coming from the far right, well, they can handle that. They do what they've done for, well, since 1945. Probably before 1945, actually, now that I think about it. Probably for damn near forever. They villainize, they criminalize, and they shut it down as soon as the goyim start to know. When they got it from the left and the right, not just the right, now they got a different problem. Especially because the left, as we know it, is largely their creation. The left that we know today, all the social justice, the neoliberalism, all this sort of thing. This was really born out of the 60s. This was really born out of the New Left. Now, the New Left was born out of, well, really the influence of the Frankfurt School, albeit not always so obvious. Took them a while before it really sunk in, before the seeds really started to sprout the poisonous trees, right? Took them a little while for that to happen. But eventually it did. So the Rockefeller Foundation imports all these Frankfurt School Jews at the start of the war. They start getting set up. Takes them about a couple decades to really establish themselves in academia. Start to push out their ideas, try to get all this stuff rooted in our culture and our academic system, our universities. But sure enough, they put the seeds, the poison seeds of the poison tree, into the ground, and by the mid-60s, it's go time. By the mid-60s, they're ready to deploy all of these ideologies that they've been cooking. Now, when the Frankfurt School was imported by the Rockefeller Foundation, they were first set up in Columbia University in New York City. Even to this day, you will notice that a lot of these elites, a lot of these ruling class people and their progeny, they tend to go to places like this, but often they will go just to Columbia. You'll notice a lot of really subversive characters like Allen Ginsberg were Columbia University people. You'll notice this. It's not an accident. This is where they set up the beginnings of the Frankfurt School in America. Now, it wasn't too long before they said, well, we really probably need a West Coast base of operations too. So what they then, of course, did is they Well, they hopped over and they started to set up shop in Berkeley, in the Bay Area. If you know San Francisco, there is the peninsula, right? And then if you cross the bay, there's like the mountain range. And on the edge of the hills, basically, is Berkeley. Now, this is a real hot point for the new left in the 1960s. This is where they really kind of got their character as we know them. This is where a lot of the protest movements kicked off. Now, as in all things that these people do, eventually they go too far. There starts to be a pushback. People start to go, eh, this is kind of sick. I don't really... Oops, not typing. Eventually, they have to set up a counter movement. So, this is 1964. No. I'm leading somewhere, I promise. This is 1964. These are the free speech protests. And this is so foreign to us because by the time the new left had power, they were no longer interested in free speech. They were only pro-free speech when they didn't have power. Once they had power, they were very much anti-free speech, as we've known for most of our recent decades. At this day and age, Jews like this were very busy trying to establish these methods using old liberal principles like free speech, because this is what laid the groundwork for things like the mass acceptance and legalization of pornography, for example, which was illegal in the old days. They had to set it up so that they could make these laws. Now, I think that actually preceded this, but in fact, I know it did. But this is, at this time, the country was still very right-wing. It was still very conservative. It was still very, and I mean that in like the old-fashioned sense, not in like the neocon sense. They were still very old-fashioned or conservative, and they did not like a lot of this hippie bullshit, and they were not shy about it. And they had no problem putting the fucking boot down on these hippie freaks. So in order to gain some wiggle room with which they could operate their subversive campaigns against the established order, they had to use these old liberal principles, classical liberal principles like freedom of speech. And they had to sort of play into that as heavy as they could. Now, once they gained power, well, they were no longer quite as interested.
So, it's been said that we've been revolutionaries and all this sort of thing.
Shut up, Jew!
In a way, that's true. We've gone back to a traditional view of the university. The traditional view, the university is a community of scholars, of faculty and students. Get together who, with complete honesty, who bring the hard light of free inquiry to bear upon important matters in the sciences, but also in the social sciences, the question of just, what ought to be, not just what is. Now, that traditional view of the university, that's the one that had been attacked by the revolutionaries, by those who, would make it into a kind of adjunct to industry, to the government, okay. And so forth.
Enough of you, Jew. The point is, this is what was going on. They were establishing the new left. Now, this was going on both coasts, but it really kind of got its character in the mid-60s from this place, because at the same time, they were also using a lot of... They were doing things like they were introducing psychedelic drugs. They were introducing and popularizing, cannabis, pot. They were stuff like this. They were doing the Laurel Canyon thing where they were introducing the rock and roll hippie shit, like the Doors and this kind of stuff, right? There was a whole long list of those kind of bands. you know, mid-60s sort of psychedelic rock bands. Let's see, what else? So they're establishing a whole counterculture because at the time, the prevailing culture was very conservative. I mean that in the real sense of, like, traditional. So this was the rebellion. It's very funny because now it's the exact opposite. The mainstream powers that be, they tend to be very, very shit-lib, very neoliberal. So the rebellion comes in the form of right-wing stuff now. So you see this push and pull, this tension, this polar play back and forth. And this has gone on for a very long time. This ping-pong game, as it were. This lets them dial up the tension of change and then ease it off. Dial up the tension, ease it off. On and on it goes. So eventually what this leads to is neoconservatism. A neoconservatism is a lot of Jews. It's a lot of Jews. I'll see if I can pull up some examples of that. Let me just pull up some lists here for I know Jews and their lists. Neoconservative. Let's do it this way. Neoconservatism. Jewish currents, the Yiddish neocon. Okay, it's not really what I want to do. It's not where I want to go with it. Anyway, there is a whole list of these fucking people. Let's see if I can find some examples. Okay, so by the time you get to the Bush administration, you have people like Paul Wolfowitz, Elliot Abrams, Richard Perl with an E, Paul Bremer, Douglas Feith. Now, they were hidden pretty well behind a whole, what would you call that? I guess, like, forward line of goys. Goys like Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. So they had their nice little front line running backs kind of thing. And then they had, like, the actual important players, which were all the ones I just listed. Of course, you also had many, many more. I think I already said David Horowitz as well. Robert Kagan. Now, Robert Kagan is the husband to, what's her name? It's blanking on her name all of a sudden. It's not loading right either. Okay, so his wife is that stupid bitch. Yeah, Victoria Nuland, real name Noodleman. Now, Victoria Nuland Noodleman is one that just got us into the Ukraine war. She was a big one that caused that to happen. Now, the reason I'm giving you this whole fucking history on neocons is because this, the Heritage Foundation, is a neocon institution. So that's why I'm laying out all this, because if you're going to talk about these people and their plans to shut down the anti-Semitism, so you have to ask yourself, who the fuck are these people? It only makes sense, right? Who the fuck are these people? Who are these people to be making these plans in the first place, right? Okay, so here's neoconservatism. So all these people are a bunch of Jews. Jews, 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 Jews.
Jew, 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 Jew.
Right. This is a little Sanhedrin, if you will. They're always talking about Islam, 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 right? Why? Schwartz, Jewish, obviously. What about this guy, but he looks pretty Jewy. Jewish, Pipes, Richard Pipes. Okay, let's keep going down the list. David Horowitz, do I even need to look that up? Okay, you think you know. Kagan is the one I was just talking about, who's married to Victoria Nuland, real name Noodleman. That's this bitch. Just got us into Ukraine war. The color revolution there. Okay, so going back. Richard Perl, obviously a Jew. Elliot Abrams, same thing. Wolfowitz, same thing. Paul Bremer, I believe. He might actually be a goy. Let me check about the early life there. No, he is like the goy in the Jew pile. The goy in the Yid pile. All right, that's pretty fucking weird. Hell, well, he is. Well, these guys, all of these scumbags, were the architect of this little lovely little thing here. Now, they weren't actually the architects. They were the ones that were to come out upon the world, specifically America, and present this to the American people as a solution to the evil terrorism problem that had just done 9/11. You know, because all those, like, sand niggies in the caves, like, they're geniuses all of a sudden, right? In fact, I think I have somebody that might break that down for you. I really like this presentation, except for the weeb element. It's the one thing that is a drawback on this presentation. Otherwise, it's great. If he had just, like, committed himself to total weeb death, he would have been better off. Would have been far more presentable. Let's see. That's the wrong thing. It's from a year ago. I'm going to have to start deleting the ones from this time last year. They're all kind of overlapping here. All right, where's my weeb presentation? So yeah, we're supposed to believe that all of a sudden you got all these genius... Oh, yeah, you got the tunnel Jews. You got all these genius sand people, right, all of a sudden. That are just going to... They're all of a sudden going to be able to fly planes into this tiny target and all this other sort of ridiculous stuff. And then this is going to bring down steel towers. Steel towers that never come down, right? Come on, man. Why doesn't this thing load faster? Okay. Where is it? No, that's today. No, I downloaded it. Show me the fucking thing. No, that's from last year. Damn it. I keep fucking with my own thing. Okay, so these neocons. 25-24 is hard to see. Okay, that's not even it either. Where's this guy? Yeah, maybe I could do this. I hope that'll turn it up. I have to keep searching. Nope. Let's try it this way. Oh, that'll just come up with what I'm looking for. So they did not come up with the idea of the war on terror. They were only tasked with coming out and presenting it and putting it into policy. The war on terror was concocted by Netanyahu and Likudniks way back in the 70s. They were even discussing the beginnings of the war on terror in 1977. Can't find this fucking video. So, you know, let me check here. I might be able to find it here. It's too bad because it's kind of funny. It also kind of lightens the mood a bit. So there's something in my way. All right, it's not even the post I wanted to make, but all right. Ha, Hanrahan using the old one there. Oh, okay. It's got to be in here. Ah, there it is.
Narrative is.
Got it. Got it. Okay, thank God. I was really jamming me up there. It is funny, and short of the little like weeb element, it's pretty fucking good. Right, so fucking neocons. Right. They are the ones that dragged us into this war on terror bullshit. This is not something that we should have ever been involved in. America wanted no part of this stuff prior to 9/11. Mossad and certain neocon elements in the CIA launched this internal policy coup. And before you know it, we're all dragged into the sandbox, and America is spilling blood and treasure left and right. Even to this day, 20 years later, well, 23 years later, well, I guess 24 now, people don't know. People still think it was fucking Muslims, like Arabs, desert people. Well, it was desert people, just a different kind. They're cousins, really. So why is this important? Because all of these people, all these neocons, they are neo-Trotskyites. In the Department of Justice, there was effectively two lunch tables. You had the neocon lunch table, and you had the neoliberal lunch table. Now, both of these type of soon-to-be American political system functionaries, both of them were crypto-communists. They were just different types of crypto-communists. So the neocons were the Trotskyites, and the neoliberals were the neo-Marxists. And I mean that in the most, like, true sense of those differences, meaning that the neoliberal wanted to use Marxist theory to achieve this international communism through economic changes and through social prescriptions. The neocon, or the neo-Trotskyites, they wanted to get this international communism through, instituted, via war, via conquest, through violence, through blood. That was the only real difference. At heart, they're both communists. Crypto-communists, communist nonetheless. Here's the video I wanted to show you. Like I said, the weeb element aside, I think it's a pretty good presentation.
The official 9/11 narrative is that brown people are geniuses now, who coordinated the most sophisticated terror campaign ever before seen that bypassed the world's biggest defense budget and then was never able to even remotely replicate anything like it again. Honestly, I'm just impressed that people from the Hidden Sand Village could fly airplanes at all, let alone Steph Curry half-court no-scope them into three really important buildings with perfect aim. That is a 9/11 miracle, and it turns out there's a lot of miracle work going on with 9/11. So let's first start with God's chosen miracle, the Dash One. A month and a half before 9/11, this guy becomes the new owner.
Take note, though, and look, you know, I'm not going to be the most popular guy for this, but I'm going to advocate it. That is how you name Jews on mainstream platforms. All he did was he muted the word Jew. You could tell what he was talking about, and then he shows a big fucking gremlin. Like, you know what he's talking about. It's not confusing. But it doesn't trip the automated sensors, does it?
...of the Twin Towers after signing a 99-year lease for $3.2 billion.
It's a miracle.
You might be thinking to yourself, wow, this guy looks very honest and trustworthy. His name is Larry Silverstein. You can't make this up. Larry did what any responsible would do after buying anything. He finagled a never-before-seen insurance policy that covered the towers for double their value. His policy request was so fucking retarded that the broker had to bring together 25 different insurance lenders to give him what he asked for, making him one of the first people in American history to get terrorism insurance on a commercial building. And as we know, days later, Kamar and Pajit Allahu Alley-oop slam dunk two planes into the towers, reducing Larry's multi-billion-dollar investment into a pile of rubble and the biggest insurance payout in the history of the world. Sadly, Larry couldn't make it to work on 9/11, and unfortunately is still alive to this day,
roaming the earth, waiting for Satan to reclaim his soul back to the underworld.
But trust me, it's not just rich that God blesses miracles with. The government gets its fair share as well. September 10th, the day before 9/11, retards at the Pentagon announced $2.7 trillion in missing funds, only to have a Tuscan Raider park a Boeing 757 directly in their accounting department the next day, 32 minutes after the second tower was hit 225 miles away. Three buildings hit in less than an hour. Now that's a 9/11 miracle, baby. Building 7, the Twin Towers' cute little lolly sister, located 1,600 feet away from the impact site, quietly fell straight into the ground 7 hours after the Twin Towers. The news and the people that run it blamed a small office fire, but every single structural engineer ever calls that impossible.
That's what the physics shows.
Saying it was a controlled demolition.
A perfect controlled demolition of an intact building.
It is too bad engineers don't believe in miracles. Total miracle death. Now, I still have some questions, and they're questions that miracles can't quite answer. Why did Leslie Robertson, lead engineer for the Twin Towers, say that she literally designed them to withstand the impact of a Boeing 707 airplane? Until 9/11, no steel structure in history has ever collapsed due to a fire. So how the did it happen three times in a row in one day? Why did hundreds of survivors report explosions?
There was a heavy-duty explosion.
Inside the lobby.
This is a big explosion.
Continuous explosion.
4x4.
Yeah, detonated.
They were planned to take down a building. Boom, boom, boom.
Why did three of the plane hijackers have a U.S. Naval Air Station military base as their primary address of residence on their driver's license? Why did NIST admit they deliberately avoided searching for explosive residues in their official investigation? Why did a dozen independent researchers find thermite and explosive materials at Ground Zero? Why is it okay for this to do whiteface, but when I do blackface, it becomes this huge problem all of a sudden? Who is E-Team, and why were they a group of Israeli artists living in the towers with unrestricted access leading up to 9/11? Speaking of which, who are the dancing Israelis, and why were they jailed and deported for filming and celebrating the towers collapsing?
Here were revealed as Mossad assets, who were arrested after cheering and high-fiving and videotaping the crash of the airplanes into the World Trade Towers.
Why did thousands of the world's top engineers and architects form an entire organization to challenge the official 9/11 lies and narrative?
Right. So, if you haven't figured it out, we are talking about Project Esther already. How does this ridiculous weeb-themed 9/11 presentation relate to Project Esther? 9/11. So, these people, following 9/11, established what? The Patriot Act. What did that do? That created an American police state, right? Before that, we didn't really live in a police state, not in that sort of way. We had one, but it was sort of low-tech. It was not, the surveillance was not like it is now. The surveillance is the critical aspect. The surveillance means that you are forever, even if you're not a white nationalist live streamer, you are forever in a invisible cage. Should you ever think about getting out of line, or should you ever talk about or communicate your intentions to get out of line, you'll find out that the cage becomes not quite so invisible, right? Okay, right. So, how do we get to Project Esther from there? Well, what it is eventually they're going to have to be a lot more on the nose, if you will, with what their intentions really are. And slowly but surely, that has been happening in recent times. They have become a lot more out with it, a lot more naked with their intentions, a lot more straight up with what they really plan to do. Even before October 7, their evil was starting to show. They kept having slip-ups. They kept having mistakes. For example, the rap Negro billionaire Kanye West thought, well, fuck it, nigga. I'm a billionaire. They can't do shit to me, nigga. Well, unfortunately, his Negroism got the better of him. Because what he found out is it doesn't matter if you're a multi-billionaire Negro rapper. The Jews are infinitely richer than you are. And they can still crush your ass. And they can take all your money. And, you know, they didn't take all of his money, but they sure as shit took a lot of it. To the point where eventually he's just like, oh, no, I mean, the Jews are fine. I was wrong. I'm just kidding. I was just playing. I didn't mean it. The predictable outcome, right? Right. So, then you know what? I mean, we can talk all the shit we want about Mr. Negro Rapper Man there, but you try losing $2 billion. It's easy to talk shit, you know? But you don't got shit on the table, but look, I mean, you got to give him some respect, begrudging respect. You know, he had the balls to actually say something when they all know, man. They all fucking know. Everybody in the entire thing, all the people in entertainment, all the people in commentary, all the people in politics, they all know. They all know who runs the show. None of them are confused. But he said something, and what they did is they didn't just crack down on him. They even had, like, faux pas, if you will. They had things where, eventually, let me see if I can find it. He had Greenblatt. Get him. Kanye West is doing this, and on this Breakfast Club show run by another Negro, on comes Jonathan Greenblatt, and he's saying that we have to, quote, get him. And then he kind of, like, realizes that it's a fuck-up because he can't really say that. And he's like, I mean, like, we ought to, like, straighten him out. Yeah, there it is. Perfect. And it's a short clip, which is exactly what I wanted.
Y'all are proving somebody like Kanye, right? Because Kanye says, hey, Jewish people have all the power, and then he loses everything.
Well, look, the insidious nature of anti-Semitism and these tropes about power is Kanye can say these things. Jews have all the power, they're controlling everything, and if we don't get him...
Get him. Oops. Get him. Wait, what?
Get him. You know, if we do everything, and if we don't get him, all the power, they're controlling everything, and if we don't get him, you know, if we don't deal with that...
I mean, deal with that. So it's just little slip-ups like that that keep mounting and keep mounting and keep mounting. And all through the time of the last few years, this has been building and building and building. And even before October 7, people were starting to notice. A lot of people were starting to fucking notice that something ain't right with these Jews. And it was no longer just an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory anymore. Now people were fucking noticing. There's something ain't right with these damn Jews. Even the fucking blacks are starting to notice. Come on. So it was pretty low-hanging fruit there with that one. But yeah, so eventually this shit like this, right? Now October 7 kicks off, and now nobody can fucking ignore it because they immediately do what they are inclined to do, which is to wage war on their enemies and do so with, like, genocidal destruction, right? Boom, 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 boom. Blowing up babies, blowing up women and children left and right. Boom, 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 boom. So they just turned Gaza into a fucking parking lot, right? Killed, like, I don't even know how many. They killed and or injured, it was like 150,000, something like that, 180,000. We don't even know exactly. It's just a fuck ton of people. Everybody in the world saw this. This was the first, like, mass slaughter. I don't want to call it a genocide so much, but more like an ethnic cleansing. That is an accurate term for it. It was an ethnic cleansing, and it was intentional, and it was funded by America to a large degree with munitions made in America to a large degree. The whole world witnessed this, right? So now they can't really keep the lid on it anymore. They can no longer keep this a secret. It's too fucking obvious, and the whole world has seen them go mask off and show themselves for what they actually are. Right? Too obvious. Now they have a problem. Now they have a problem because it is the noticing, as we like to call it, is very widespread. Knight Rider, what's up, man? He says the power this international Jew wields is out of control. Yeah, he means the Greenblatt. Yeah, no, it's fucking insane. It's fucking insane. The, you know, some people accurately said that he's the president of the United States. Yeah, pretty much. Like the actual president of the United States, right? Yeah. No, I mean, it's probably a good way to say it because in practical terms, effectively, that's what it is. Effectively, that's what it is. Right. So now after they have this mass noticing, which they cannot get back, they can't put the genie back in the fucking bottle. It's not happening. Right. With this being the case. Oops. That's not what I wanted to do. Okay. All right. They cannot get this genie back in its fucking bottle. Salute to you, Knight Rider. With this, thank you, sir. Please, like Mr. Knight Rider did, if you can support the show, do. Try to see if we can break three digits. That's the goal. We don't even shoot that high anymore. Just three digits is our goal these days. But yeah. Anywho, back to the point. With this mass noticing underway and with all kinds of people seeing this come out, eventually you're starting to notice that they're starting to notice, rather, that something needs to be done. So what do? They turn to their think tanks. They turn to the think tanks. Well, that is who? That is these people. This is the Heritage Foundation. Now, like I was saying, I was showing you all this long list of neocons and Jews and whatnot. Okay. At some point, they realize they got to do something. So these people have concocted a plan. This plan, they're calling Project Esther. Now, if you know the story of the Book of Esther, there really is no... It's exclusively a story about them celebrating the fact that they killed this... it wasn't a king. It was a what was he? What was Haman? Haman was... he wasn't a king. He was a... Sort of like the prime minister, I guess, to the king. I forget. I'll have to look up exactly what he was. What's the term? There's a specific name for it. He was like the emperor of the region, right? But he was serving the king of, I think it was Persia. And basically this Jewish woman quietly marries him, Esther, and poisons him because they had heard word of a plot. We'll read it from the actual thing. They go over it briefly. They had heard word of a plot that this Haman had to kill all these fucking Jews, right? So who knows if that's even true. Maybe they just fucking did so just because, you know? Maybe they just made that shit up because they didn't like this guy. I don't know. But, right. So eventually they do, and she kills him. And so the point is they had to go about this in some covert way to destroy their enemy, where they poisoned him. Well, let's watch this.
Antisemitism in the United States is at an all-time high. In the wake of October 7th, when Hamas perpetrated the worst atrocity against the Jewish people since the Holocaust, anti-Jewish hate crimes in the U.S. skyrocketed over 360%. This wave of anti-Semitism, however, is not entirely organic. Instead, it is supported by an infrastructure of organizations whose aim is to dismantle Western democracies, values, and culture. And their primary target is the United States, which makes...
So they lump themselves in with Western democracies and Western values and this sort of shit, right?
Makes today's anti-Semitism not just a Jewish issue, but an American issue.
Ah,
in response,
see,
the National Task
too.
Force to Combat Anti-Semitism is launching Project Esther, a plan to counter anti-Semitism in the United States. We are organizing a broad coalition of Christian, Jewish, and other private sector organizations and individuals to leverage existing authorities, resources, capabilities, and activities in pursuit of our vision.
Pursuit of our vision. Wow. Okay, so that is the short 1-minute video about what their Project Esther is. Where's the original?
The Heritage Foundation, a highly controversial far-right...
So this is... All right, so that's their official one that I just showed you. This one is TRT World, which is... I forget what Arab country it is from, but it's an Arab country's news coverage of what you just saw. This is them responding to it. So I'm laying out what Project Esther is, and then I'm going to tell you when we're all done with explaining what this all is, what I think they did as a test run. Now, I don't think it was one test run. I think there was probably several in different communities. Call them anti-Semitic communities if you want. There was probably several different test runs. But there was one here in the WNNS online streaming space as well. And I believe that there was probably one done in several smaller communities. I'm sure leftist... anarchist communities had their own versions done as well, where the people were turned on each other, where elements inside, let's call them sleeper agents, that had been put into the community long ago, were then activated and basically set about to tear down the community from the inside. Having already had a good deal of trust from the community, they were not suspect until it's too late, until they're already setting the things in motion to rip the community apart, have people turn on each other, and this sort of thing. Whoa, we don't want yoga shit. We just want this one.
Guys, look at that awesome ramp right there.
I don't want your yoga thing.
But I'm
stop.
Gonna hit it.
Chick, stop. Okay.
The Heritage.
Okay. Oh shit. Altered Lawn. He says, "Here's some Nick." Well, thank you, Altered Lawn. Altered Lawn. Altered Lawn. We'll get there, Harry. We're not there yet. We're working our way in there. Hail Altered Lawn! Hail Altered Lawn. right. Let's get back. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your support. Appreciate the support of everyone who supports the show. Makes it possible. Okay, let's move forward. So let's see what they're, because they're going to break it down from an adversarial point of view. Now, they're not obviously, they're Muslims or Arabs or whatever, something along those lines. So I think this is funded by a Muslim country, maybe Kuwait or something like that. I'm not going to bother to look into it, but it's something like that. So they're going to break it down from an adversarial position, and they're not us, but they also are targets of this.
Foundation, a highly controversial far-right pro-Zionist think tank, is proposing a new strategy titled Project Esther to help the U.S. government target pro-Palestine and anti-war groups. The foundation is run by former staffers of President-elect Donald Trump, and its goal is to influence Republican policies. Last year, it published a policy wish list known as Project 2025, which many see as a blueprint for the incoming Republican president. It details how to expand powers of the presidential branch and how to implement an ultra-conservative social agenda in the U.S. while also providing strategies on how Washington can boost its financial support to defend Israel. During his election campaign, U.S. President-elect Donald Trump distanced himself from Project 2025, but since winning the elections, he has nominated a number of contributors to the document for top government jobs. As the Heritage Foundation's latest offering, Project Esther was produced in conjunction with the National Task Force to Combat Anti-Semitism and places all U.S.-based pro-Palestine and anti-war groups into a category it calls the Hamas Support Network, or HSN. The project labels the groups in this category as anti-Zionist, anti-Israel, and anti-American, and deliberately links them.
So they also keep using this term HSN, Hamas Support Network. This is pretty weird choice of language. Because a lot of people they're going to target with this operation really aren't particularly in love with Hamas. They're just anti-Jewish. Probably like most of my chat. They're not particularly Hamas lovers. They're just anti-Jewish.
With terrorism, while also detailing a plan to dismantle their infrastructure within 12 to 24 months. The project also proposes a policy to deport foreign pro-Palestine protesters with student visas and target universities with tax-exempt statuses that contribute to anti-war initiatives. Despite taking its name from the biblical story of a queen who saved her people from extermination, the project intends to do the opposite by persecuting anti-Zionists and silencing any voice that's against Washington's unconditional support for Israel under the pretext of protecting the country and its values. Although Trump has not publicly accepted or rejected the proposed project, it aligns with his agenda and discourse, as he has also called for the mass deportation of foreign nationals who support the Palestinian cause. So if implemented, just how far will Trump's administration go to repress pro-Palestine, anti-war movements in the U.S.?
Right, so you can see there's a bunch of Arab names for this. So this is from some Arab place. It says TRT is a Turkish public broadcast service. Okay, so it's Turkish. All right, so they're also a target of this. Wait, what did that just do? Okay, there it is. They're a target of this. Okay, so they're also opposing it for different reasons than you or I would. Okay, so where is these? So this is the actual Project Esther page from the Heritage Foundation. We've read this before, so I don't know if I want to go into it in too much detail. I think that we read it a while ago, so it's probably entered the archive at this point and therefore is probably paywalled, but I'll unpaywall it if people want to go back and look at our original coverage of this whole thing, because it's important. But we're going to just kind of gloss through it because I want to kind of bring it up to what's going on now and what I think is happening with a lot of stuff that's going on recently. So anyway, this is Project Esther, a national strategy to combat anti-Semitism. America's virulently anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, anti-American, pro-Palestinian movement is part of the Hamas support network that is trying to compel the U.S. government to abandon its long-standing support for Israel. Right. So they're saying that all these different student protests and stuff is trying to put pressure on the United States to drop the our greatest ally bullshit and feeding these people endless money and support while they, you know, blow up babies and shit. Like, there is some of this stuff, like, look, they're not our kids, and, you know, my empathy for outgroups is very limited. But at the same time, I'm not a monster, and I don't really like seeing, like, these Arab people's babies, like, their head blown open. It's just still fucked up, even if they're not our kids. It still is something just generally disgusting about seeing children murdered, even if they're not ours. It's worse if they're yours, but it's still fucking disgusting to see somebody's fucking baby's head blown open and their brain just missing because it's just like an empty skull. It's just stuff like that. And there's, you know, there's an endless list of these. I mean, I don't even want to know how many images like that I have saved because it's fucking horrifying. But there is a lot of this stuff. It really is extensive. And right. So it's obvious why people are going to oppose this. And this is why I think you get more of the opposition from the left. But anyhow, they're saying basically, they're trying to put it in like every pro-Palestinian group or support is pro-Hamas. Well, Hamas is the elected government of Palestine. So they're playing a little game there, even by the language. Now, they're going to lump us in with this. Even if I don't particularly have any care for Hamas, I just don't like Israel. And I don't like what Israel is doing. And I don't really like Jews too much, which, like, at all. But whatever. Anyway, it says, supported by activists and funders dedicated to the destruction of capitalism and democracy. I think that's a bit of a stretch. The HSN benefits from the support and training of America's overseas enemies and seeks to achieve its goals by taking advantage of our open society, corrupting our education system, leveraging the American media, co-opting the federal government, and relying on the American Jewish community's complacency. All right, there's a lot to that. First of all of these pro-Hamas Arabs, Middle Eastern people, whatever you want to call them, that are here in America, why are they here? How did they get here? Well, usually through these immigration policies, through these NGOs. Well, who runs those? It's the same people. They just didn't know that their dog was going to turn and bite them. That's it. Right? Right. Okay. So there's that. What does it say next? Advantage of our open society. Okay, who pushes for the open society in specific? Same people. Weird, right? So this really is a lot of their own agendas coming back to bite them in the ass. These are things that they thought were just going to fuck over white people. And ultimately what ended up happening is it ended up fucking over American Jews as well. I mean, shit, George Soros literally has a subversive NGO called the Open Society Foundation that funds a lot of our worst politicians and things like this, right? So I don't really understand how they're going to say leveraging the American media. The American media is predominantly controlled by Jews. The owners of these networks or funders or managers are predominantly Jewish or answer to Jewish interests. So it's a little weird for them to act like the American media is like this secret anti-Israel, anti-Jew Hamas network. That's a little dishonest. Co-opting the federal government, I don't know how they're going to sell that one. I mean, I guess they're talking about like the five people in the American government that are like the Ilhan Omars or something. It's pretty silly. It's pretty fucking silly. Jew tyranny is un-American, I'll say. I agree with that, Altered Lawn, yeah. It's not very Aryan to kill or rejoice in innocent, needless murder. Yeah, no, it's not. By definition, it's not. Aryan, of course, means noble person, right? It's not noble to celebrate, you know, wanton violence for its own sake, especially for things that has nothing to do with the survival of your country or your people or anything. It has to do with serving these foreign interests and their corrupt little agendas. There's nothing, no justice in that, right? There's no justice in that. Yeah, 14th column. What's up, man? He said, when your pet boons start noticing, you have a problem. Fake high IQ card revoked. Fools, but they can't help themselves. I know. You know what that is, though? That's another golem that's turned on them. And throughout this, they've experienced many golems turning on them. So another one is this new left that I started this whole segment with. The new left was their creation from day one. It always was, right? So they thought that because this was something that they made, and they made it for the explicit purposes of subverting white Gentile society. You got to remember, when they made this, there were still country clubs that they were not allowed to join. There was neighborhoods they were not welcome to live in. This is a different time, you know. There was still restrictive covenants at that time. Not so much anymore. You know what I mean? So what they found is that's another golem, and it turned on them. And you saw the new left, including some of their actual operations, like Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. You saw them decide that they're going to turn on them and go against the Jews. And they did. And Zionism in specific. So they're getting burned left and right by their own monsters. We, of course, being white nationalists, we could not help but laugh and enjoy it, because they've been fucking us over for God knows how long. And usually they're using these very golems to do it. So when these very golems turn around and bite their master, we're going to enjoy that. And fuck them if they don't like it. Right? Right. Hell, 14th column. You said, I have one of these ones? I don't think I have one of these deals yet. Oh, no, I got to make one of those. I make one of those thank you drop things. All right, hell, 14th column. Thank you, sir. Right. So it says, the National Task Force to Combat Anti-Semitism intends to enlist all willing and able partners in a coordinated effort to combat the scourge of anti-Semitism in the United States. So it just gives you little takeaways there. It goes on to explain more about it in details. It explains that in Torah, in the book of Esther, Milagat Esther tells us that in the mid-4th century BCE, a thriving Jewish community in ancient Persia risked extermination, according to them. Haman, the Persian king Ahasuerus's prime minister or vizier, right, so this is who I was referring to. I couldn't remember. I did say prime minister. I just kind of guessed right, I guess, right? Angry because Mordecai, a Jew, refused to bow to him, told the king, there is a certain, we can do it in Jew voice. He said, there is a certain people scattered and separate among the peoples throughout all the provinces of your kingdom, and their laws differ from those of every people, and they do not keep the king's laws. It is therefore of no use for the king to let them be. If it pleases the king, let it be written to destroy them. And I will weigh out 10,000 silver talents into the hands of those who perform the work to bring it into the king's treasuries. Right, so he's offering 10,000 talents. I don't know what that equals to, but probably a decent amount of money at that time. He's paying them to wipe out the Jews, basically. Right? He's paying them good money to wipe out the Jews. Right. So this is what they're talking about. It says, with the king's approval, Haman plotted to kill every Jew in Persia, drawing lots, Purim, to determine the day of their execution. Unbeknownst to either the king or Haman, Ahasuerus's new queen, Esther, was secretly a Jew in Crypsis, and therefore marked for death. Additionally, Mordecai, the man who had so enraged Haman, was also Esther's cousin. Mordecai encouraged her to use her position and influence to beseech the king to reverse course. Right, so she's working a plot behind the scenes against him, right? Penelope! Goddamn, hello! Hello, Penelope. Salute, Penelope. Wait a minute. Do it this way. Not alphabetical? Oh, yeah, it's on the end. Ha! Penelope! Penelope kicking ass. She says, I ain't saying she's a gold digger, but she ain't fucking no hoe broke niggas. She ain't fucking with no broke niggas. From Gold Digger, Ye knows. Michael Jackson knew. Prince knew. You know. I know. Your followers know. What a broken landmass that we, long ago, quaintly called our nation. It does bring up a good point. If everybody knows, and I did kind of, like, quickly brush against that point a minute ago, you know, a few minutes ago. Yeah, I mean, everybody knows, so then what then has to happen, right? I think the difference is organization, right? I think that if you go back, this is another point of the same thing, right? If you go back in time far enough, and not even that far, really, I mean, shit, to the 30s, a lot of people knew. Like, this was very common knowledge. Race consciousness was very common. Most people had it. Awareness of the pernicious nature of Jewish influence, that was also well known. These were not really secrets, nor were they pearl clutching, you know, things that they are today. They were not as taboo a topic as they are today. I mean, shit, Father Coughlin had like millions of people listening to his radio show constantly. And he would talk about all this. You can probably find a video of that. So the question is, if everybody knows, what then? I mean, yeah, I know the Fed Post answer, but I mean, short of that, what else you got? Because okay, Mother Coughlin, before the 36th election. Oh, look at that. How long is that? 5 minutes. Good Lord. So he was. This is crazy. I've never seen this before. Yeah, so he would give these big radio addresses. And so people knew. If everybody knew back then, everybody of reasonable intelligence knows now, short of the Fed Post answer, what else is to be done? Because even if people want to jump to the Fed Post answer thing, okay, the problem there is, like, eventually you have to return to a state of civilization. And even if that were to happen, you're going to eventually have to go back to a civilized, you know, stasis, I guess. I think I had a Michael Jackson thing about that, actually. Did I save it? I thought I saved it. About him fighting with the Jews. Michael Jackson apologizes to the Jews. There it is. Yeah, I think this is it.
Skinhead, deadhead, everybody gone bad. Situation, aggravation, everybody, allegation, in the suit, on the news, everybody, dog food, bang, bang, shot dead, everybody's gone bad. All I wanna say is that they don't really care about us. All I wanna say is that they don't really care about us. Beat me, hate me, you can never break me. Will me, thrill me, you can never kill me. Chew me, sue me, everybody do me. Kick me, kite me, don't you black or white me. All I wanna say is that they don't really care about us. All I wanna say is that they don't really care about us. Tell me what has become of my life.
First, Michael Jackson has been forced to apologize to the Jewish community for some lyrics in one of his new songs. They Don't Care About Us, one of 15 new songs on the History album, includes the line, Jew me, sue me, followed by a similar use of the anti-Semitic word kike.
The king of pop caught in controversy again. He said he'd lose the lyrics that outraged critics. Now he's singing them again for his new video.
Jackson promised several months ago to revise the lyrics to his song, They Don't Care About Us, lyrics many called anti-Semitic. Jackson's in Brazil now, shooting the video for the song, and Entertainment Tonight has learned he is still using the controversial lyrics.
All right, I think we get the point. The point is that a lot of people know. People in entertainment know. Everybody in entertainment knows. Everybody in political commentary knows. Everybody in government knows. Everybody knows. You know, there's a lot of normies, a lot of average people that don't know. But they're not really relevant. Like, they don't matter. They're never going to matter. They're not going to shape things one way or the other. So then what is to be done? I think this is why I was going back to the Father Coughlin thing. People knew in big numbers millions of people listened to this guy in the 30s. Why then wasn't that enough? Almost all the people had what we would now identify as a racial consciousness. What is the difference? Why, if they all had a racial consciousness and knew about this issue, why wasn't anything successfully done about this? We had presidents that did. I mean, shit. Richard Nixon was talking about it in office. This is why they really removed him. Watergate was an excuse, right? What does it tell you if the president knows and if he even says stuff about it in private, they plot to get him removed? And he's not able to remove them. It makes it clear of what we all know, that the president is not actually the one with the real say-so. In the same way that you have that famous photo of, I think it's Nathaniel Rothschild, poking the chest of the king of England. And the king just has to stand there and fucking take it. In the same way, it shows you that the king is not the highest power. Rothschild, in that situation, is the highest power. So that is a good question.
History is seriously involved in national politics.
A little handful of mobilized.
Father Charles Edward Coughlin today is far more than just a voluble voice over the radio. One of the first to stagger under the impact of Father Coughlin's muscular eloquence. Senators, amazed by his influence, uneasily watch the newspapers. President Roosevelt is first loudly praised, then more loudly played by the voluble priest. Publisher William Randolph Hearst, keen student of mob psychology, calls Father Coughlin to his ranch in California to look him over.
So this guy had big influence, and he was an old-school Jew namer, as you would say. I mean, this can't be part of the WN series thing, but this is not a white nationalist, but could even do a separate thing like that about these kind of people. He does deserve his own deep dive. The thing about this is, what lacked in that time when everybody still knew, what was missing? The ability to organize it. It doesn't matter if the normies wake up, if they're not organized, and people do not politically organize themselves. That's why you have to have people like Barack Obama and stuff, all these people trained in the Alinsky method to do political organizing. That's why even the new left has to have that, because without that, then it's just a bunch of angry people. It's a bunch of people with grievances. It doesn't do anything unless it's organized and directed. People do not organize themselves. So in order to actually get something done, to change policy in a way that actually fixes this crap, we're going to have to organize. Now, if you take a look at the people in the modern WN scene who take the most heat, who are they? It's always people that are the organizers. It's always the organizers that they target the most. It's always the organizers that they send the modern Praetorian guard of Jewish power to go knock on your fucking door and intimidate you. The FBI, that is. Why do they do that? Because this breaks up the organization. If we, people that have issues with this, grievances about this, are unable to organize it, then, as she said, it won't make any difference if everybody fucking knows. I mean, she wasn't specifically saying that, but maybe she's getting at that. If everybody knows, it doesn't matter. That's why the whole, like, let's wake up the normies. It's like, well, they'll still be normies, though. Normies don't, like, mobilize into action. Normies can be used, but they have to be directed. First, you have to make them aware. They have to be aware of the issue. They have to care about how the issue is affecting them personally. We were showing the other day, we were showing the farm protests in the early 80s that were fueling the militia movement, right? One of the reasons that worked is because it was personal. The people who were being affected by that, the people who the Jewish banks were stealing their farms for pennies on the dollar, that was a personal thing. It wasn't like, it wasn't a theory. It wasn't an abstract thing for them. It was very clear what that was. It was very personal. That's how it has to go. You have to be able to, this information, this has to affect somebody in a personal way before they're going to care enough to put their ass on the line to do anything about it. Big thank you, Penelope. Saving our butt over here. All right, let's move on. So let's get back into our Esther specifically here. Okay, so I'll just finish the Esther part here. It says, with the king's approval, Haman plotted to kill every Jew in Persia, drowning... Oh, we did that. Okay, sorry. So in response to that, it says, do not imagine to yourself that you will escape in the king's house from among all the Jews. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and rescue will arise for the Jews from elsewhere, and you and your father's household will perish. And who knows whether a time like this you will attain the kingdom. So this is saying, like, if you don't do something about it, Miss Esther Jew, it's going to come for you as well. This is a thing. This is what motivated her to do it, right? So Esther mustered the courage to oblige her cousin's plea. So the cousin Mordecai, who was really the linchpin of this whole thing in the first place, basically urges her into doing it and convinced the king Ahasuerus to reverse course. The result, Haman and his family were hanged. So in 1945, it might have been 5 or 6, was the end of World War II, when they hung all of the NSDAP leadership after the, it must have been 46, it was, maybe it was in 47. When they hung all the NSDAP leadership, they called that Purimfest 1940, whatever the year was, because of that. It was seen, and it was done on the same day. They hung all the NSDAP leadership on the same day that Haman was hung. Everything they do like that is done ritualistically. Mordecai replaced Haman as the king's visor, right? So he literally took his job. And the Jewish people were saved. Oh, wonderful. As Rabbi Yosef Telshkin so aptly points out, the character of Haman, unfortunately, is far from unique in the Jewish experience. Oh, woe is us. Oh, God. Oh, God. As one bit of Yiddish proverb summarizes the unhappy episodes of Jewish history, so many Hamans and only one Purim. So many Hamans and only one Purim. In other words, so many of us are Haman to them. So many of us are a threat to them. And there's only one day in which they hung us, or hung him. So in other words, there should be many hanging days. In other words, they're implying that there should be total Amalek death, Tad. It should be Tad. Total Amalek death. That's what they're advocating here. I mean, you know, very subtly, but nonetheless, right? Today, Israel, Jews everywhere, and Americans, see, they always lump in, right? Because it's not really Americans. It's only them and only them. This doesn't apply to anybody else. Yeah, face yet another Haman. The question remains, will we face the threat as Esther did so many centuries ago, or capitulate to intimidation and fear? Well, here's the thing. I don't think that any of the student protests are going to, like, you know, result in some mass pogrom or something. I don't think that's going to be the thing. Never did. But this has motivated them. This has motivated them to find a way to destroy the actual... Yeah, the actual resistance has motivated them to do that. Okay. So they go on to explain what they're going to do here. And this HSN is basically everybody that opposes them, everybody they feel is a threat, this sort of thing, right? It says, guide coalition members toward thematically grouped, distinct, this is what they're going to do. Guide coalition members. So basically this is another thing. This is not like just one specific group. This is an operation. This is an operation that's being done by coalition members, which is any like power or organization or institution that's willing to participate, is what they said. So there's all sorts of different operatives at play here, right? So it says, right, it says guide coalition members toward thematically grouped, distinct, and mutually supportive lines of effort, or LOE, described in the accompanying campaign plan that integrate to varying degrees the following methods or ways. Expose the critical resources fueling anti-Semitism. Give a comprehensive understanding of the infrastructure that sustains individuals and organizations supporting Hamas. Hamas. Organize a coalition of private organizations. Erode support for anti-Semitism. Synchronize coalition actions to maximize impact. Focus. Communicate. So specifically this one here. Build and coordinate efforts to and activities of private organizations in the U.S. to achieve combined effects. Erode support for anti-Semitism means exploit fissures. This is the key one. Exploit fissures within and among anti-Semites and affiliated organizations and their target audiences. This is the key one of all this stuff written in this thing. Now, this is what I think is at least partially behind a lot of recent problems. They find people to use. They either have people already in positions and in place to be activated, and if they don't, they find somebody that they can use. Somebody that is compromised. Somebody that is weak. Say, I don't know, maybe they have horrible alcoholism problems, for example. Maybe they have the self-control of a crack nigga. Maybe they're that. Maybe they have an overweening pride. Undeserved, but they're still excessively prideful. Maybe they have secrets they want to keep. They find people like this, especially people that can be bought off for very little money. And what they do is they fund it. They put them in a position where they either do their bidding or else. Now, who knows what the or else is in a lot of cases? In a lot of cases, the or else is your secret comes out, whatever that is. Now, here's the thing about this. I think that in a lot of cases, like in this Odyssey situation that happened in the past 5 months, this was not an important thing to them, so much as it was a test case. I think, as I said earlier, there were test cases in all kinds of different arenas. This was just one per this particular community. I think that there was ones where, you know, leftist, like Antifa-type communities got, you know, the ones that supported Hamas or supported Palestine, they got the division sowed for them. I think communities that are white nationalist and or national socialist in their orientation and anti-Jewish, they also had this division sown and amplified within them. And all it takes is a few people that want or are willing to do it for whatever reason. Perhaps they were compromised early on. Perhaps they always have been. Perhaps they were compromised recently. Perhaps they always were. Now, I don't know what kind of money it takes to get people on board with this, and I don't think that the people who were used to do this effect are people that really knew all of this. That's not usually how it works, right? The information is compartmentalized. In fact, the people who would be deployed to make this happen probably don't even know what it is that they're doing or why. They just know that they were given a set of instructions and money to do it. There is a lot of this going on across the board. When you take a few live streamers and you're able to goad them into a situation in which they're trying to hide something desperately, and you can use them by making them think that they can hide this thing if they just attack the credibility of everybody else. And then you have a couple live streamers waging a war against everybody else. That's a pretty good indicator of who that is. Useful spics. Yeah, that's one way to put it. Yeah, it must be a very stressful situation to be in. You know, and eventually it's probably like this.
Wait.
Probably something like that. You know, all it takes is somebody who has to hide something, has to hide a lie like that. I don't know, Biggest Smalls, but I will say this. I don't know who or if anything did happen behind the scenes for particular individuals involved in all this kind of stuff. But there were specific... Once chaos erupted, it was certainly fueled. And there were specific accounts that could be seen to fuel it. Accounts that showed up, fueled the chaos and the problems, and then disappeared and have not been seen since. All in a bubblegum said, this happened to me a couple days ago in Stu's chat. It was clearly an agent of chaos. First time I was called a Jew and a shill. Well, I'd get used to it, because if you're going to be around here, you're going to be called all those things and more. It doesn't even really matter. You know, I mean, the truth is not relevant. They just say whatever they have to, you know, and they think it's going to work. They think that's going to work. And, you know, surprisingly and disappointingly, there are enough dumb people that just listen to dumb things, you know. Yeah, exactly, Collins, or Tenpenny, right? This is another one. There are specific accounts that, I don't know about him in specific, but there are specific accounts that fueled a lot of the chaos that happened. And I don't just bring this up per this. I'm telling you right now that if you were involved in monitoring leftist groups, you would see probably the same things happening. You would see them triggering purity spirals, them triggering conflict between different leftist type of people, and getting them to fight over perceived differences in ideology, perceived this, perceived that. And this is how they're doing it. And I believe this is happening across the board. And I think we're only sort of in the beginning of all this. And I think that in these cases of this kind of stuff here, this is just a test run. This like Odyssey thing, it's or whatever it was, like the whole, let's call it, it's not just one platform. It's you know, half a dozen platforms or whatever. Trying to sow division and problems and get people to attack other people. That is... it's a test run. It's a small-scale test operation to see if this technique works. right? And then once they're able to do it in this small contained area, this small internal network, then they can deploy it on a much larger scale. Now, if you think that it matters a lot what happened with this, this is still small potatoes compared to where they want to do it in places like Twitter. Believe it or not, this is not nearly as important as you might imagine it to be. There is a lot of people around this scene. It's they've had a fantasy in their head for a very long time that this whole thing we do here is a lot more important than it is. Now, it matters. If it didn't matter, they wouldn't bother to do anything about it. They just let it be. However, we shouldn't delude ourselves into thinking that we are, you know, doing a cyber uprising against the Zog or some shit like that. That's blowing smoke up your own ass too far. Where now you've lost the plot. And you're now believing yourself and your buddies to be far more important than you actually are. At the same time, the other side of that same coin is if it didn't matter at all, they wouldn't spend any money, resources, or time to try to stop it. So, it's somewhere down the middle. And I think it does actually have an effect on the consciousness of people, the existence of these type of shows. And, you know, there's many of them. I think it normalizes a lot of these discussions. I think it gives a place for people to gather. I think it also serves a purpose for the IRL stuff too, which is what they get most upset about. But all these people that want to be IRL supremacists and say, oh, well, your stupid live stream doesn't mean anything, bro. It's all about the IRL, bro. The IRL is the only thing that matters, bro. So, okay, well, guess what? A lot of people that are involved in these IRL nationalist communities, guess where it is that they first hear of the existence of these IRL efforts? Where do you think they first hear about it? What, you think they hear it on fucking Fox News? No, they hear about it on white nationalist projects, always, like 95% of the time. Now, I was talking to Flood about this, and that's what he said, and he's right. I'm going to give him credit because it's a good point, and he's right. These people that hear about these groups to join or these things to do or be involved in, they usually hear about it on a podcast, something like this. Maybe they wanted to do something like, say, Ozarkia. They wanted to join an intentional pro-white community. They wanted to try to build something for the future, something that gets them away from the multi-culti hellholes. But they didn't really know that exists. They didn't know somebody's already trying to do that. They didn't know somebody's already got momentum headed in that direction, something where they can hitch their wagon to that same train and get where they want to go, and that there's already a support network in place to help them do what they want to do. Well, if they didn't know that, well, then they came here and they listened to it and they found out that it exists. And they found out because they had here to come and learn about it. We're not the only podcast that have talked to Billy Roper, but that's not the point. The point is, if it wasn't for shows like this and other ones, then the people that want that won't know it exists. So this idea that, like, this IRL exclusionary mentality is stupid. They are symbiotic in their effects. And, you know, the people that have caused problems, this is a true comment, they've become the 109. It's literally everyone else, but not them. Literally everyone else, right? Everyone else is the problem. And then, of course, when you're participating in this and you are actively attacking dozens of actual white people who are doing actual work, you have to justify this. So you have to make up a ridiculous, absurd, and retarded conspiracy theory. You have to pull it out of your ass about, you know, some retarded thing about Freemasons and just like absolutely schizophrenic nonsense. And the other people who want to be accepted in that little community, maybe they even want status within it, they will accept that story. Worse over, they will repeat that story, even though they know it's bullshit. They know the guy pulled it out of his ass. They know he made it up verbatim, just came up with a bunch of nonsense, strung it all together, and said it with a very, you know, confident tone, and all of a sudden everybody just buys it in that audience, or at least a good portion of them do. The people who don't buy it shut their mouth, because if they express that they don't believe what the guy is saying, all of a sudden what happens? The rest of his chat dogpiles them. Maybe he even calls them out and starts calling them names and doing the gay little high school bully shit. The shit that will get your ass fucked up as a grown man. It's the kind of shit you only pull online. But you have to ask yourself, is this kind of thing all just about some guy's pride? Or is there something bigger here? The idea is to distract from what actually happened. The idea is to make it about Dave Gahari or somebody else. They want to come up with a narrative and say that, you know, there's some evil subversive. Well, first of all, every accusation they have is actually an admission, because this is a very old tactic. But I'll tell you this, and this is an absolute fact, this is absolute truth. I haven't spoken to Dave in about, 2.5 months, I think. So how is he coordinating coordinating the Illuminati Freemason anti-Catholic white nationalist plot or something when he doesn't even talk to the people that are allegedly in this plot? It doesn't make sense. It's a stupid idea. It was always a stupid idea. And it's actually quite disappointing how many people that I once thought were not maybe geniuses, but smart enough, fell for it. Very, very disgusting. Yeah, exactly, radicalized. You're talking about people's wives, talking about putting them on stripper poles, and just disgusting stuff. Just disgusting stuff. This is all divisive stuff, and this doesn't need to happen. There are certain lines that you just don't cross, and talking about other people's wives in a sexual way is probably one of them. Now, I'm not the morality police either, but if she was my wife, we'd have problems, big problems. This here, you have to ask yourself, why does it seem that every aspect of what's happened fits this bill? Why is it that the result of all this nonsense has meant that good white men have either stopped or considered stopping doing what they've been doing, their good work, considering stopping or are stopping doing their good work because of the subversive efforts of a few people to lie about them, intimidate them, dox them, threaten them, harass them, cyber-stalk them, cyber-bully them. A lot of those things are actually crimes, by the way, but that's besides the point. Why is it that there is a group of people doing exactly that, and yet they're able to project out to everybody else that they're the victim? Doesn't that sound a little too familiar? Doesn't that sound a little too fucking familiar? It does to me. It sounds like exactly what the playbook of this exact thing is. Exploit fissures within and among anti-Semites and affiliated organizations and their target audiences. Sound familiar? Does to me. This is not the first time I've posited this idea, but it does seem more and more likely to be connected. Now, like I said, we're not going to be goofy and think that these particular individuals in question are smart enough or capable enough to do any of this. But they are primed to be people that could be used. All it takes is someone that can be compromised. And it doesn't have to be money. Like, to make it about money exclusively is not even correct. It's not even money. It's about who's got stuff they want to hide. Who's misrepresenting? Now, I wish this wasn't so. It would be easy for this not to even be a problem. I never wanted anything to do with any of this stuff. I really don't want to relitigate all of it. It's boring and it's fucking old and it's really uninteresting. And those people are uninspired, uninteresting, and really generally unintelligent and crass. They're not important. But the thing about it is, what's happened through their behavior and use of collective powers has caused a lot of problems. And it would be foolish to assume that it's not connected to something like this. Yeah, I agree. I agree, Lon. Me too. Yeah, it's fucking disgusting. It's blood boiling. Yeah, absolutely. It was just gross, you know? And the twisted thing is for him to turn that around and be like, the white knighting. No. There's no white knight. There's just absolutely un-Aryan behavior. And that's what that is. Like sexualizing another man's wife in front of hundreds of people. That's fucking disgusting. And it's not just another man. I mean, both of those people they're referring to are longtime figures of this online white nationalist scene. Long before I was, and long before these people were. And there's just a fundamental lack of respect on several levels that makes you kind of want to, it makes you wonder where these people think that they're going with this shit. Okay, let me jump to, speaking of Warren and Emily, they did something on, all right, this is actually some more stuff about how Jews are saying this isn't going to help us, right? The group behind the Project 2025 has a plan to protect Jews. It will do the opposite. Here is exactly the wrong way to fight anti-Semitism. And this is some Jew talking about how that's not going to be a good thing. Okay, but I want to actually see what they said as well a little bit. I've avoided doing too much of their content or anybody else's because I wanted to try to make much more truly unique content that is a little more long-lasting. But I have it open. But I do want to see what they said about this because they did their own episode entirely on this topic, and I want to kind of take a look and see what they were talking about. Who's talking about boofing whose wife? They'll get kicked out of an MC. Oh, yeah.
Welcome back to Modern Politics. I'm Warren Balog.
And I'm Emily Yukis.
We're just coming out of the second week of January 2025, and today we're going to dive into Project Esther, which is this plan put out by the so-called conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation. We covered this some on this previous week's war strike. Stryker and I delved into it a little bit, but there were some aspects of it that I want to dig into a little more deeply. I should note that this was released back in October 7th of 2024. And at the time, I had a number of people send it to me who were supporters of our show and others. And I thought about talking about it then, but we didn't know at the time whether or not Trump was even going to get elected. And it just sort of seemed like kind of maybe a thing to rally donors, Jewish donors around Trump. But now he is in. He is lining up a whole cabinet of Zionist neocon war hawks, and actually his attorney general nominee, which was Matt Gaetz, was replaced by this woman, Pam Bondi, who is on record saying that the FBI should be investigating any American who expresses sympathy for Hamas, not just foreign students living in the United States.
Oh, wonderful.
Before we dive into that, we can say a word about the Heritage Foundation itself. For anybody who doesn't know, the Heritage Foundation is this very powerful think tank in Washington. They are the ones, this election cycle, they were most famous for being behind Project 2025. They have a 2022 revenue of $106 million for a think tank.
Yeah.
Damn.
So very well-funded, very powerful. They actually were founded in 19... 19-
yeah. Those guys are already excommunicated. Yeah. Well, that's the consequence, right, of consistently behaving badly is that eventually you get excommunicated from the entire thing. And whether they know it or not, whether their small, twisted little fan base knows it or not, they are excommunicated. It's not my decision. There's no one they can point to and cry at and seethe about and target. Everybody knows, and everybody doesn't want to touch those people with a 6-million-foot pole. They want nothing to do with them. And so you know what that does? That means that they have only each other. That's it. They have their own little twisted thing that's not, it's not white nationalism. It's not, I don't even know what it is. It's a twisted little, it's like a wannabe Ethan Ralph thing, but without the artistry and entertainment value that Ethan Ralph brings. Ethan Ralph has skills as an entertainer that these people don't have, and knows how to deal with this stuff in a certain way. And you know what? Even him, he pays a big price for the kind of crazy antics he gets up to with all that stuff, and has for a long time. It's not going to go well. It already hasn't gone well. And it's not smart. And eventually you're just excommunicado. It's basically already the case.
1973, during the Nixon administration.
Piss streaming, yeah.
And during the Reagan administration, they became very famous because they released in 1981 this sort of blueprint for the Reagan presidency called Mandate for Leadership. Mm-hmm. And this is why people on the left were getting all scared about Project 2025. In fact, I want to play this clip from Sky News just discussing the Mandate for Leadership and the role that the Heritage Foundation played in Ronald Reagan's administration.
Heritage came to prominence when the organization wrote their first manifesto in 1981. They called it a Mandate for Leadership. Essentially, it aimed to roll back the state and unleash free market capitalism. President Ronald Reagan liked the ideas so much that he gave a copy to each member of his cabinet to review. The Heritage Foundation claims that among the 2,000 proposals, about 60% of them were implemented by the end of President Reagan's first year in office.
It's no exaggeration to say that you've more than made your mark on American history. Tonight, I thank you, Heritage thanks you, and so does the conservative movement.
So yeah, hugely influential think tank in Republican politics, and really in many ways responsible for all the rollback of government regulation in the 1980s that led to the era of unfettered capitalism that has since completely destroyed the middle class in America.
Right, yeah.
So these guys are not good. Now, Project 2025 was making headlines during the Kamala Trump campaign, and a lot of people who were sort of adjacent to us, who were supporting Trump, were pointing to proposals in Project 2025 about rolling back, you know, gender theory and...
Yeah, mass deportations. I mean, all the stuff that we really, really wish would happen.
Right.
Really, really wish would come true. And, of course, then Trump did the thing that he does where he flip-flops. He says, oh, he's working with these guys. Oh, but no, now he has nothing to do with it. And it's like, what is going to happen?
Right. I personally believe, and I feel very safe in making this prediction, that all of the based stuff in Project 2025 was there to create excitement on the right. As we know, there was a huge effort spearheaded by Elon Musk and the PayPal Mafia and Peter Thiel in Silicon Valley,
yep,
to loosen up free speech and sort of recapture some of that meme energy that helped propel Trump over the finish line in 2016, mm-hmm, but which was not there, which was not present in 2020. It was kicked out of the,
yeah,
MAGA campaign. It was all about the Platinum Plan. And
everyone on 4chan had already basically abandoned Trump.
Right.
Everyone, you know, when he didn't deliver in the first term, pretty much everybody on the far right, real white nationalists, have lost faith in him.
Yes. And we saw more people this time around. I think there were more white nationalists or white nationalist adjacent people. Right-wing Twitter, you know, that's not explicitly WN, but around there, gathering momentum and steam to get Trump in.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the point is that I think that the things that were good in Project 2025 were there as bait to get people to sign on, and all the media controversy over it and the Democrats saying how racist it is was really just part of the Trump campaign's PR plan, and you know, Trump officially distances himself from it. But if
yes, he's right. It was. It was there as bait. It was there as red meat for the base. And this whole thing about like Twitter loosening up a little bit on the free speech stuff, that's also part of it as well. They were losing too many people to actual places where you really could say whatever. And the system realized it couldn't actually exercise control on the Gab and the Telegram type places. So they wanted to get everybody back onto the farm. And they wanted to make it short of you like Fed posting kind of stuff, short of you going, you know, full Wickstrom on them, you know, that you could more or less get away with it most of the time. Now, that's not exactly how it worked out. And as it becomes closer and closer and more assured that Trump got in, it became tighter and tighter. And more, once he was in, more people started to get banned, right? So the sad part is, like they said, a lot of the stuff that they propose is perfectly based and good. The problem is they're just never going to do it. Dealing with the invasion, that's what we want. Problem isn't that they're saying that they're going to do it. The problem is they're going to say it and they're not going to actually do it. There's a ton of stuff like that. They know people want mass deportations. They know people want the 11 million invaders that poured into America under Trump. 11 million is the official number. It's probably higher. They know that the 11 million invaders that poured in, people want them out. Shit. Fucking mestizos want them out. Latinos want them out. But they're not going to do it. That's the fucking rub. They're not going to do it. They're going to dangle that hook out there. Everyone's going to bite. And then they're not going to do it. That's a good point, American Life, yeah. So sure you want to break the spell over their followers? They kind of really keep the dumb people in one place. That's the way I've looked at it. You know, there's been a lot of lies. Is it like trying to make it out that, like, you know, this show is failing? It's not. We have right now, I would say probably approaching 400 viewers live right now on this show, right now. Here at 2:35 a.m. on 1/15/2025. Last week, our peak attendance number was, I think, a little under 1,000. So that's not exactly the hallmark of a failing show. But we would be lying if we were going to say that this hasn't done any damage. It has done damage to me and others. And it's not even specific. It's not even specifically just the lies. It's also that people are afraid to get involved in the chat as much as they used to because they don't want to get targeted. People are afraid of donating because they don't want to be noticed by this mob of crazies. People don't want to put up with the harassment. So, you know, I was thinking about doing that, maybe just not highlighting donations, because it's like, I think that's a thing, man. I think people are afraid of a mob. And there's reason to be. There is reason to be. They've done things that are not acceptable. They've doxxed about a dozen people and, you know, regularly issue death threats in their chat. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe it's a good little holding pen for the nut jobs. It's a good little padded cell. The way I've looked at it is kind of like that, though. It's exactly that. Like, I don't want those kind of people in my chat anyway. I don't want them supporting me anyway. I don't want to feel like I owe them anything. We will get by just fine without them, both financially and in terms of show attendance. So we don't need them. We don't want them. And it would be better if they just go somewhere else. It'd be better for everybody, them and us. And that's actually been my solution all the whole time. Keep my name out of your mouth. Keep my show's name out of your mouth. Keep my viewership away. Stay away from my show. Just stay away from me. Stay away from my shit. Stay away from my show. I won't talk about you. You don't talk about me. It's really straightforward. But that kind of thing, that's just too rational and logical. And, you know, it just doesn't work for what their game is. So that's why there's a lot of reason to think that there's more to it. than just a personal grudge. There's a lot of reason to think that maybe there's something more at play here. But you're right. You know, maybe it's a good idea to just let them have a little playpen where they can all just circle jerk each other, make up, you know, cute little, it's like fan fiction. Like every day there's a new fan fiction. You know, I show a YouTube video of Ukrainian models with blurred out boobies because it subverts DLive. If you're stream sniping me on DLive and I show a YouTube video of Ukrainian models that are topless, but their boobies are blurred, but you can still, you know, kind of see it, that will fuck up your YouTube channel. And that was entirely the intent. So if you do that, they'll say, you're showing porn. Yeah, that's not what porn is. Porn is when you film people having sex. There was no sex. And it's not even softcore porn. It's a photo shoot. It's a fashion shoot, basically. It's not really pornography. And as my friend actually gave me, that was showing a few days ago, maybe a couple days ago, there is plenty of NSDAP stuff that's exactly right down that line. So, but then again, I mean, these are the kind of people that think that the NSDAP wasn't pure enough for them. That I think he gave where was it? Let me see if I can find it. There was a, yeah, here it is. I mean, not that I have to even show this, but you get the idea. Like, the NSDAP showed nude art in their film. So it's not the whole like fake prude thing, right? We're like I mean, I don't even know how to characterize that, right? Like, we're Puritans. It landed on fucking Plymouth Rock or some shit. Like, you know, we're not. And we live in the modern world. And, you know, I'm not a homosexual, so I'm not, like, offended by boobs of white women. It doesn't bother me. In fact, it's quite the opposite. It's pleasant. It's enjoyable. Yep. Anyway, it just gives you an idea of what I mean, though. Like, this is a fundamental dishonesty. And the only way you can launch these kind of attacks and make up these kind of narratives is to be dishonest. But doing this, especially doing it to dozens of people, is to do this, to exploit fissures within and among anti-Semites and affiliated organizations and their target audiences. Because this kind of sentiment is a fissure. It's where there is not agreement, there is not total agreement on what the rule should be. Some people want to LARP as if they're Puritans. The very people who want to do this LARP, I've seen them show much more heinous stuff than a topless photo shoot. Let's put it that way. the point being, this is, I might jump ahead because I don't really want to watch the whole episode. I just wanted to hear what they have to say about the Project Esther thing in specific. To the Esther part, because they're talking about the rest of the Project 2025 as well. If you don't follow this channel, you probably damn well should. One of my favorite channels on here, and they started about the same time I did. I think, yeah, maybe, I don't know if they, same day or same, I don't know, very, very, very simultaneously. I think they had like a dozen or so episodes up when I found them, and I was in the early days of Odyssey. Because unlike some people, I've been here since you can live stream to Odyssey, since like day one. So I didn't show up just 2 years ago and start causing problems. I've been here the whole time. I've never not been here. And I've been doing this show at about this time for 4 fucking years, almost 5 years now. I had half a decade invested in this. And I care much more about the time than any money involved. Time is something you cannot get back. Doesn't matter how rich you are. If you're a billionaire, it doesn't make any fucking difference because you cannot buy your time back.
To combat anti-Semitism less than 2 months after the October 7th attack in Israel.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just let the Heritage Foundation, let's hear from them describe what it is.
We are launching this national task force to monitor and combat anti-Semitism. Our vision is to coalesce institutional Christian and Jewish organizational leaders to monitor the current and future rise of anti-Semitic trends, establish metrics and joint action items to combat the rise of anti-Semitism, and establish a coalition to defend the Jewish people and to provide a firewall to counter this rise of anti-Semitism in America. The objective of the task force is to link together organizations to facilitate information sharing, crisis response, establish working groups to develop action plans for the next 12 months and beyond, identifying, highlighting, combating malicious activities and actors, directing and significantly contributing to this anti-Semitic activity in the United States.
To just give one more example, here is one of the YouTube shorts from the Heritage Foundation. This is on their channel.
Yeah.
About it's a lawyer talking about civil rights law, and it's talking about invoking Title VI of U.S. civil rights law against people who are, well, against colleges that allow pro-Palestinian protests. Now, we covered this in a past episode, what a weird twist and inversion this is of the law, but essentially what it's doing is it's taking Title VI of U.S. civil rights law, which is a horrible, horrible anti-white piece of legislation. It's unconstitutional, according to the First Amendment, the right to free assembly and free speech. It's the thing that broke down housing, schools. It was the wedge that was used during the 60s and 70s to integrate, at the point of a gun, with a bayonet in their backs, to integrate white American schools and unleash hordes of violent blacks on little white kids in schools all across America, break up white neighborhoods and everything else. So here you have the Heritage Foundation, formed during the Nixon administration, which should be, I mean, they're all against DEI and critical race theory.
Oh, yeah.
They should be, if they were anything actually worth anything to white people, the first target that they should be trying to attack and roll back is the anti-white civil rights legislation of the 1960s that forced integration on the country. Instead, here they are invoking that principle, invoking those laws, to criminalize anti-Israel protests on campuses. Here's what they had to say.
Civil rights law ensures that Jewish students, like every other religiously and ethnically protected group, deserves the civil rights protection. But when you have organizations engaging in behavior that is not just anti-Semitic, but it is often illegal behavior. So when a university fails to actually take appropriate responses, that is a violation of the civil rights of those Jewish students. Students that are engaged in pro-terrorist activities should be deported. Unfortunately, numerous universities refuse to turn over the information documenting which of these visiting students have been involved because the universities fear that those students will indeed be deported. The United States federal government itself should embark on a mission to deport such visiting students that are expressing support for Hamas and other terrorist entities.
So it's worth noting that
If you remember, shortly after October 7 kicked off, maybe not shortly after, it was maybe a few months after. Well, I don't know. It was several months after that, maybe 4 or 5 months after. There were the mass student protests at the universities. I remember giving them some materials in the War Strike chat. This was a big deal. The system did not like this. The system was more than happy to permit them to do these mass anti-white protests during BLM and this big, basically white pogroms. That was cool, as far as the system was concerned. Once it became the thing where all of a sudden, now, these students are coming after Jews, sometimes quite literally, other times rhetorically, then it became a real fucking problem for them. And they had to do what we know that they love to do, which is, of course, shut it down. And shut it down they did. So these protests were pretty wild. I don't think the likes of which we've seen quite since the 1960s. They were literally occupying buildings in Colombia. So this was something that really upset them. And this was something where they were getting in open confrontations between Jews and Muslim students and this sort of thing. As I said before, it's hard not to enjoy this because you know that the only reason there are substantial numbers of Muslims in the United States is because of Jewish NGOs that have brought them here and Jewish politicians who have changed our immigration laws, i.e. Hart Celler. Because of this, this allowed them to come in substantial numbers. Once they're here, usually it's a problem for white people. But this one time, all of a sudden, the pressure built up in such a way that it was now a problem for Jews. That's an unusual thing in the recent history of the United States. I don't quite know how it was in Europe, but I don't think it was much better for them either. And they started to have, I mean, shit, I routinely search the word anti-Semitism into YouTube to see what I find. And before October 7th, that used to be sort of a surefire way to go dig up something kind of, you know, fun to comment on about what the Jews were crying about today. Not anymore. There's just so much material all the time that it's like most of it's meaningless junk. And most of it always has something to do with Israel's latest war crimes. I searched it today. What I actually found was a lot of videos complaining about the situation for them in Australia. Apparently in Australia, this has gone very poorly for them. Europe, pretty much the same, where they're saying now, I'm afraid to live in France now because, you know, it's become so anti-Jewish and all this sort of stuff. Well, why is that? Well, it's because France has a lot of Muslims brought into France by them, following their wars in Syria and in the Middle East. So they trigger a war. This causes problems. Eventually, it causes refugees. Eventually, the refugees have to have somewhere to go. Where is it they're going to go? They're always going to go to a white Western country. And, of course, you have Jewish immigration NGOs, you have Jewish politicians here that are there to make sure the laws are just right, to let them in, and that the NGOs are there to help them finance them coming in and setting them up. And so this was really enjoyable to watch. I'm not going to lie. It was fucking enjoyable. There's a little bit of karma. So, okay, wow, you finally your little plot finally backfired on you just a little bit. And just when it didn't even backfire on them hard, but just a little bit. That was enough for them to overreact pretty drastically. Papa Smurf! What's up, man? Big Papa Smurf! He just says, stiff arm salute! Hail Papa Smurf! Oh. Thing stuck on there. Papa Smurf! Big Papa Smurf. Thank you, sir. Salute to you. Big salute to you. Press on with some more of this Heritage Foundation situation.
Foreign students in the United States who are studying here still have basic constitutional rights. I mean, you don't have no right to free speech in the United States as a foreign student, just because you're here. So just the idea of deporting people on the basis of expressing a political viewpoint or a foreign policy opinion, that in itself is outrageous and legally questionable. Now, again, I want to emphasize.
So I want to show you this, just what I mentioned already. So if you search YouTube just for anti-Semitism, you see that there is a lot of complaints and upset about Australia. So this is Australia. I think that's just a general one there. Australia. That's an old one. Australia. Let me just put it on recent. Let's just play within this last month. That's just green chart. We're going to get to that in a minute because that's also relevant. Australia. Some general Jew one there. I don't know what that is, but you get the idea. Another Australia. Another Australia. Another, yeah. on and on it goes, right? So that's, what is that, a dozen or something? So there's a lot of those. Why is that? Well, there was incidents, there was some graffiti incidents and stuff, but they've had a bit of trouble here. So there's one where they said says, fuck the Jews. Now, you know, when I see this stuff, my first thing that always comes to my mind is, well, what you doing, Rabbi? Because a good portion of these are self-inflicted. It's not just that they can cry victim, but they can also, I mean, in the maybe not in this case in particular, but oftentimes when they have this kind of thing scrawled on the side of a synagogue or something, they get money out of that. That is a paycheck. What happens is the rabbi then files a security grant application with the government, and then the government then hands him tax money as a security grant. 97%, according to them, 97% of all the security grants issued in the United States with the Homeland Security grants are given to them. 97% for this small population, right? That's a lot of money being given out to them to make them feel like they're not scared. But there was a couple things that happened. So there was first this. Then this is the kind of stuff where it looks a little bit like a what you doing, Rabbi, where they can never draw a swastika correctly. So I don't know what that is. Like, rabbis need swastika drawing training. This, when I see this stuff, this is where I think of a what you doing, Rabbi. The other one might have been just like teenagers, or I don't know, maybe it was like skinheads, but I don't even know how many skinheads Australia even has. But anyway, this is definitely a what you doing, Rabbi. How do I know? Look at the swastikas. They look like they got Parkinson's. They're also not drawn properly. It's a hooked cross. It's bent at an angle. It's not up and down like that, like a Christian like cross. It's not like the Swiss cross, like square cross. It's on an angle, right? I mean, I think I even had one of these things where it showed these different symbols. Yeah. Okay, so even here.
The hooked
cross. Well, there they show it upright, but I mean, if you're trying to show it like the NSDAP, it's obviously set at an angle like that, right? It's a Yiddish swastika. Oh, I'll just say it is. But if you look at it there, I mean, it's very sloppy. It looks like they don't really know what they're doing. They just seem unable to do it. Which is really weird because, I mean, it's literally just make a cross and you just add the feet. Like, how hard is that? I don't know. Seems very hard for them. Maybe they try to do it in one move or something. Maybe the vril overpowers them while they're channeling the Aryan symbol. Or who knows? Whatever it is, it's not. It always looks fucked up at the end of the day. And this is something, I don't know what Free Palestine. This could be some, like, angry, you know, Muslim kid for sure. It could be thing. It says, Hitler on for Allah something? Dwayne? I don't know what the fuck that says. Allahu Akbar? I don't know. Aloha snack bar? See, even look at this. Here's a couple examples, right? This one the fuck goes off the fucking canvas. I mean, altogether. The other one, I mean, it's like on the metal grating too, so it's weird. The tails are all kind of bent too in a way that just looks wacky. Like, this is not normal stuff. So not only that, but additionally, they had a synagogue burned down. Now, to my understanding, maybe there's been updated information, but when I last understood, they were calling it an act of terrorism, but I don't know if they even caught who was behind it. You know? I don't know if they even found out who was actually the one doing this. Here they have the goons coming up with their spray paint and their hoodies and their covered faces and all this, which is unsurprising. But if this is the case, then I would have guessed exactly what I guessed. It's either what you're doing, Rabbi, or it's teenagers. Well, what do you see? Teenagers. Sometimes it's teenagers doing it on behalf of the rabbi, who is going to, of course, get the grant money from it. Now, this is – let me see if I can find this, dude, just to make my point here. Up, yep. Right. As I pointed out earlier, your money, when that happens, your money goes to them. Jewish groups get 94% of Homeland Security grants. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security allocated to Jewish institutions $12 million, or 97% of $13 million in funds for securing nonprofits. This was in 2014. So granted, I'm sure the number is as large of them. It's the same proportion or more. It's probably more money than this, is my point. And it's probably a lot more now that everything that's happened since October 7. It's important to say, I mean, I say October 7, but it's not really October 7. It's Israel's response to October 7. Right? So there you go. You see it right from the big nose horse's mouth. Okay, there you go. So this is what's going on in Australia, and they're getting very, very upset about this. And, you know, they're making fun of all this spray paint on the walls. I better call in the terrorism department with this squishy swastika. I mean, come on. This thing's, it looks like it's melting. Right? And then they're going to have these very, like, stern and concerned, oh, this is, oh, God, da 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 da. This one's pretty crazy. I don't usually see them say that. It says, kill Israel. Doom. So I guess there's a whole rash of this, but as you saw earlier in the freeze frame of the guys with the security mask, I mean, the mask on the security camera, it's teenagers. Like, this is teenager shit. There's a burnt-out car. I think there was another one where they had, it burned down the synagogue, right? Then they're having a lot of this, like, media pressure on them saying, politicians are doing nothing to stamp out anti-Semitism. So they're really crying a lot about this. It's very upsetting. Here's another one, Sky News Australia, Australia, Australia. It's just crazy. So this is another interesting point that's a little bit different from this is a little bit different from the other topic, the main topic there of – this is the Nosferatu here has something to tell you. A little different from our usual topic there that we're doing tonight of the Project Esther. But this one is very important. It says nearly half of the world holds anti-Semitic views. Yeah, well, exactly, Harry. DHS gave North Carolina flood victim $700. Right. Well, that shows your where you stack up in the priority list, right? That shows where you rank in their priorities. Very low. Very, very low. Fourteenth column. That's pretty good. Let's see if I can find that one. To the big list of all the stuff. It's funny when the chats are aggregated, it's quite crazy. Where is that here? It's funny. Oh, shit. Oh, that's way up there, huh? Give us some more Puerto Rican jokes. Where was it? Good one. Oh, yeah, yeah. How do you get 20 Puerto Ricans in a shoebox? Tell them it's a raft. Oh! A black guy and a Puerto Rican in a car. Who's driving? The cops. That's pretty good. Right, so back to this. Point is, they're now saying Greenberg... Nosferatu here. He's now up here to tell us that half the world is anti-Semitic. Well, I'll say those are rookie numbers, boys. Let's get going. You know, now they're going to complain about all this. It's like, well, here's the problem. Here's the problem, Nosferatu. Here's the issue. The numbers were already pretty decent before this, but the reason it's so high is because your little ethno state there has decided that it was going to go full like ethnic cleansing on these Palestinians. Didn't have to do that. I mean, I think that was the goal the whole time. I think that's what they always wanted to do. And they were just looking for an excuse. But it's when they started to, like, kill men, women, and children in mass that all of a sudden the whole world was like, these fucking monsters. So, you know, they can cry out victim, and they do, and they will. But at the same time, if you really look at it, it's their own doing. I mean, I can pull up picture after picture after picture of just, you know, children with their brain missing from their skull and shit like that. Children that have been turned into, you know, mashed potatoes, basically. And, you know, you can't, they can't act like it's for no reason at all. It's certainly for a reason, and it's for a reason that is pretty universal. You know, people don't like to see children turn into, you know, mush. It's just not an appealing thing, right? Oh my God, Knight Rider, that sounds terrible. They seem to have a pattern of that. Seems to be a thing with them and money. You know. Oh no. That's a bad one, a whole load of bubblegum. That's rough, man. Alright, let me see if I can find this here. Let's see. So that would be, jeez. I can find. Around here. Oh, that's recent. You can find some examples. I mean, there's just a fuck ton of this stuff. Yeah, no. What's this one? Looks like it might be it. Yeah, stuff like this, right? Stuff like this. There's just an endless supply of these kind of things. That's a hospital. The problem for them is the world sees this shit, and they're not a fan of what they see. They're not liking it. You know, brown children, they're not ours, but they're still, it's, I don't know, there's still a human thing where it's just this, if you're not a psychopath, you still feel like a pity for them. And the whole world sees this shit, and it just doesn't like what it sees. And, you know, a year of this shit where they're, like, watching these people's children get turned into fucking mashed potatoes and burned alive and just sick shit buried in piles of rubble and just on and on and on and on and on. And, you know, this is the hospital they got to go to. It's a fucking mess. And, you know, it's in some ways it's their own doing in a way. I mean, the hospital conditions. But, like, this thing where they're being mass slaughtered, that's just fucked. And the world doesn't like to see this. I can blame everybody else and go, oh, anti-Semitism. Well, you earned it. You earned it. You're not the victim here. So more and more, you know, they're just told that, right? So long, man, for years, they've been able to hide behind this shit and be like, oh, we're the victim. We didn't do anything. Well, now they did do something. They did a lot of something. This is not theoretical, right? I could play you rabbi video after rabbi video of them telling you that they want to destroy the West and, you know, they want to destroy Edom and Amalek and all this kind of crap. But to most people, destroying Edom and Amalek is like theoretical. It's a concept. You know, dead children is not really conceptual. It's pretty obvious. You know, something's fucked. Nobody likes dead children, even if they're not your group's children. It's just something twisted about it. Yeah, I mean elderly and children, right? Well, it's just like children are innocents. Like, you know, they might not be ours, but while this is going on, you got fucking creatures like this doing these little weird little games and messing with people while this is going on.
It says made in Israel, kosher sex. Sorry, I should do this more professionally, but I'm just too excited about it. I'm so proud of this kosher sex, my shaman, made in Israel, baby. From Israel, love is going out. Make love and war. Israel has to make war right now against Hamas. Gross. Because they're monsters and killers. And as long as they continue to slaughter people, you know, there's not going to be peace. We have to destroy Hamas. But that doesn't mean that Jewish marriages should suffer in the meantime. Make love and war. It's almost like you have to choose. Make love, not war. You know, sometimes you got to make love and war. And, you know, my daughter Hannah, dedicates, she gives a lot of these products free to Jewish soldiers, married Jewish soldiers, the IDF soldiers.
Gross.
Made in Israel, baby. Let me get a good picture of this. Hold on.
What's the most Jewish sound?
Oh, no. That didn't work out well. Woo! Oh, no. Look out. Look out. Oh, man. I thought I had to inject something amusing into the end of that because all this like dead children shit is fucked up. All right. There you go. There you go. Okay. So it's an accurate depiction, too. Hey, it's their own words. Yeah, it's no wonder that half the world is turning anti-Semitic. I mean, how could you not, right? Let's see what Nosferatu has to say for himself.
Director Jonathan Greenblatt. Jonathan, it's nice to see you, sir.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the poll results, because they do show that nearly half of all adults, and let's just put the math on the screen here, folks, globally, this is about 2.2 billion people, hold significant anti-Semitic beliefs. That's shocking to me.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning. When we first did this in 2014, the number was about 1.1 billion. That was 26% of adults. So the idea that the number has doubled in the last decade is dramatic and quite alarming. And if you dig down a little bit, Andrew, there's even more worrying stuff in there. For example, adults under the age of 35 have a higher prevalence of anti-Semitic attitudes than the older generation.
Hold on, you're saying, say that again?
Younger people now have more Jewish attitudes than older people. That's a change. But so we're seeing this prejudice harden in the millennials and Gen Z.
How much do you think that is a function of social media?
Yeah.
Or what do you ascribe it to?
Look,
I won't lead the witness. What do you ascribe that to?
So I think we're all living sort of in a post-10-7 world. Let's just acknowledge that.
It's a post-10-7 world. Ugh. Even this, right, he can only frame this as he's the victim, right? They're the victim. Oh, me and my group, we're the victim. Right. Okay, so again, this is a matter of the numbers and proportion, right? If you accept their numbers, this is very much like the hullabunga, right? You accept their numbers. You go, okay, you got 1,300. 1,300 dead Jews. Okay. It's not exactly correct anyway, but who cares? Let's just say it's true. Okay, so then how many dead Palestinians you got? You got well over 130,000 dead Palestinians, I think, and dead or injured. I think it's, I don't know exact numbers. It's very hard to get the exact numbers on these things, but they have something like 30,000 dead children or something like that at this point. Okay. So you've 10x'd on vengeance. See, if they'd done it another way, they would have got away with it. In terms of, they would have maintained their PR globally, had they done it another way. Had they got like the Jewish commandos or whatever to go and like kidnap Hamas leaders or something, nobody would have given them shit for that, and they would have still be, you know, riding high on their victim shield. But now that's done. You can't like blow up 100,000 random Palestinians and then call yourself a victim. And the problem is, as much as they want to send out their Nosferatu here to tell us how much of a victim he is, it ain't going to work. It just ain't going to fly. So now they're struggling really hard because there is social media element. You know, Twitter allowed for some kind of free speech, and there's been an awful lot of Jew naming on Twitter. There's like JQ Radio and stuff where there's just, you know, talking about this kind of shit all day. There are spaces with, you know, 1,000 people in them, 2,000 people in them, and they're all talking about Jewish power publicly, you know? Now, I think at the same time, we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves here too much. There is still a big siloing effect where you are put algorithmically amongst other people who already agree with you. And when you venture outside of your usual algorithm, you eventually find out that, no, it's not quite as far advanced as you might like it to be. and that you, what you're seeing that seems like, oh my God, it's everywhere. You know, Twitter is 4chan now. It's like, well, no, not really. It's you're just seeing other accounts that already agree with you because the algorithm knows what you agree, what you think, right? Approximately. But it is way more advanced than it was 2 years ago. You know, I said it a few times, but when I started doing this, I had people say to me, like, why even talk about it? Like, why? Like, it's so risky and like, you know, people don't understand. They just think you're evil and mean. And I said to these people, I said that give it enough time, everybody will understand why I was talking about this issue. And that this will become one of the most defining issues of the next decade and probably further. I didn't think it was going to be so soon. I thought it was going to take until almost the end of the decade. So the results of reality jumped my prediction. It was ahead of it. Yeah, I don't know why the flicker happens at hour 4, but I don't know if it's only my stream because I don't have the problem unless it goes on after. It's exactly like 4 hours. It starts doing that. It's like, turn off the stream now. You're going too long, bud. You know. But I think the reason you don't have it on other streams is most other streams don't go 4 hours. You'd have to look at other streams that go more than 4 hours. Yeah, it'll stop flashing shortly. It does that for like 30 seconds, and then it stops. It's like the Odyssey warning light, but it's Odyssey exclusive. No other stream is doing it. Rumble's not doing it. FTJ is not doing it. White Pill isn't doing it. We have 4 different platforms, so, you know. Happened on the other stream? No way. Never happened on the other stream before. Let me see. No, Rumble looks fine. You guys are kidding. Just fucking with me. I mean, look what White Pilled. Stream has ended. That's not good. It hasn't ended. That isn't good at all. I hope it's just a glitch. No, it's good. White Pilled is good. Let's take a look at FTJ. And FTJ is good. No, it's an Odyssey bug. It's an Odyssey bug. It doesn't happen with anything else. It's just Odyssey. It's been doing it for 10 minutes. That's unusual. Usually it happens for like 30 seconds and then it quits. There's a subtle pixelation every fifth frame on FTJ, but not a flash. Huh. Well, that's odd. I haven't heard that one before. That's a new one. That's a new one. Wheel. Trying to think of why that could be. We had a problem where it used to happen frequently, but that was a result of it being the wrong resolution. Is it stopped yet? The Odyssey flash stopped? I think it's an Odyssey thing. GPU is a 4090, RTX 4090. It should have stopped by now. Actually, it's not. It's actually not. I'm making it on a 4090, but it's going out of a... I said it's Quadro 5000. There you go. Serbian Bull counted on 447 total viewers. There you go. Suck on that one, Trogs. And they're not botted viewers either. It's actual viewers. So we're not botting our viewers. So there you go. That's what they call a dying show. We're done. We're done, Serb. It's over. It's over. I guess we gotta just pack it in now. If we had 47 viewers, I'd probably keep the show going. So just for the record. Yeah, 14 Column said good on our end. Yeah, I think, I don't know, man. I think it's always been a long-term Odyssey problem, and they've never fixed it. And I really hope that they just finally get to the point where they release Odyssey 2.0 because it's, man, it's been a long wait on that one. They're trying to switch it over to that new, what is it called, Arweave thing instead of whatchamacallums, the LBRY thing. Hopefully they're going to release that by the, you know, by the summer. I really hope. It's about that time. It's about that time. Messenger says just stop flashing. Okay, cool. Cool. 448. Nice. Now we're talking. Cheers to 448 viewers. Never sunset us, motherfuckers. Never. Eat that. All right. Let's get to wrapping it up here a bit. Let's just see what else Nosferatu says, and then I think we'll probably come to an end, I believe.
3:30. But social media certainly has scrambled people's brains, especially overseas, because keep in mind, we surveyed 103 countries, mm-hmm. right? Nearly 60,000 interviews. And so I think what we also find is sort of the Al Jazeera effect. So pumping propaganda 24/7, you know, across people's cell phones and on their television screens, it has an impact.
But in the United States, it's nowhere close to that.
No. Nowhere close. So the United States came out at 9%.
That's what I mean. Like that's so misleading.
Like West Bank, Gaza, 94%.
But yeah, you can. It's a surprising number, but then when you look at the reaction around the world to all these things, let me
give you something that's interesting. So in Western Europe, where we've seen a number of really violent, ugly anti-Semitic acts,
yeah.
that actually is a region with only 17%
right.
on average.
Up from 9 here, though.
Yeah. Sure, but look at places like Sweden, Canada, Norway. Right. They have 9%, 8%.
Where's the 50? Where does it get skewed?
It gets skewed in the Middle East.
Middle East.
Which is 76%. It gets skewed in sub-Saharan Africa, in Asia, again.
So if we were just talking about the West, if yeah. you will, what would that number look
well,
like?
Well, what we conclude at ADL is by the way, this won't surprise where Joe was going, I think, a minute ago. You have a handful of vocal, violent minority
right.
who's terrorizing, if you will, not the silent majority, but the silenced majority. So right. whether they're on college campuses concealing their identities and screaming right. at Jewish students, or they're in mm-hmm. European capitals like Amsterdam committing a pogrom, it's a small...
Yeah, that was another one that happened. So it was a pretty wild one, right? So in Amsterdam, in the Netherlands, they had a soccer match, and I believe the story goes something like they had a moment of silence, I think it was, for I think it was like drought victims or fire victims, I believe, in Portugal or something like that, Spain, I think. And so there's like a moment of silence they do in the stadium, the soccer stadium. And because the other team was Israel, the Israeli Jews are up in the audience, like making noise and hissing and stuff when they're supposed to be doing the moment of silence thing. And this pissed off the entire stadium. And I think this carried over. And there was another thing that happened that same time in the Netherlands. And this anger about that was kind of continuing. And something else that happened where in Amsterdam, they picked a fight. Like the Israelis there picked a fight with some of the locals over something. Maybe it was over that. I don't remember the details. But eventually they started the fight and they got their asses kicked. And then because this happened in a group, they started calling it a pogrom. You know, it's actually kind of good they did that, though, because it really gives you an idea. So all these other times in history that they're referring to, oh, good, we were pogroms and stuff, they want you to think that that means that they were, like, mass murdered or something. But if that's what they can classify as a pogrom, well, really it means you started a fight and you lost the fight you started. Not exactly inspiring a lot of appreciation for that idea. I mean, who the fuck likes that? That's ridiculous. You know, you don't want the fight, don't pick it, I guess, right? But it shows you that when they're calling, oh god, we were pogromed, it doesn't mean that they were mass murdered. It means they probably picked a fight, got their asses kicked, or they started shit, and then eventually people got tired of them and just were like, you know, humiliating them publicly. And this is what I've heard. And read is that a lot of these pogroms were probably just like basically big public humiliation events more than like mass murders.
All group right. of emboldened.
Let me ask you this. And not that there should be a competition for, you know, what religion or race is more.
I don't want to win that competition.
But no, I know. But my question to you is yeah. if you were to look at racism, if you will,
sure.
against either races or other religions, how does this compare?
Well, look, this is the most extensive poll of anti-Semitic attitudes in the world. We didn't look at, let's say, anti-Black racism or anti-Asian sentiment. It might be interesting.
As if you care about that.
To do that. We know in the United States that unfortunately Jews are the most targeted minority on a per capita basis, despite
no
their
reason.
Small numbers. So I think all prejudice is bad. But
always worth repeating that their number thing is bullshit. They're not 2%. They're way more than 2%. 2% is counted just on religious Jews that go to synagogue. That's it. Doesn't say fuck all. It doesn't say fuck all about their real numbers. To get their real numbers, you have to include all the atheist Jews and all this other shit. All these other types, agnostic Jews, just ethnic Jews. And they don't. When they say 2%, they're really just talking about the ones in the synagogue. That's it. So, we don't know what the real numbers are. And they're not ever going to tell us. Because if we don't know, then we can't really be, you know, we can't plan in accordance to that. We can't make policy about them or against them in accordance to that. We have no idea what their real numbers are. Not a fucking clue.
Seeing this upsurge of anti-Jewish sentiment, seeing this conflation of people upset about Israel's policies, thinking they can vandalize synagogues and beat up Jews in public life, very problematic.
Okay, so you just laid out the numbers.
Yeah.
The question is, what's the solution to this?
Well, here's the good news. So 57%, again, in aggregate, say that anti-Semitism is a problem and government should do something about it. Look, I'm optimistic about the Trump administration, that they're going to take some strong action. We're getting signals from Mar-a-Lago that that's going to happen. That's a good thing no matter how you vote.
And when you say strong action,
what is strong?
I mean, look, it looks like we may be getting closer to some kind of, I don't know, a resolution, a settlement, a ceasefire, something, in Israel and Palestine. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if you think that that's...
God willing, the hostages will come home.
So,
God willing, they'll be back. We want that.
So
absolutely.
How much does that change this dynamic, or does it at all?
Well, look, I think I just got back from spending a week in Israel. I can tell you that deterrence... The Israeli government feels like deterrence has been reestablished. What happened in Gaza with Sinwar and Daif, what happened in Lebanon to Hezbollah and Nasrallah, the pagers, the walkie-talkies,
right.
All of it. The Israelis feel like deterrence has been reestablished. That's a good thing, but that doesn't change the fact that here at home, governments need to act, and I'm optimistic. Maybe it'll be Department of Justice, yeah. Department of Education.
To do what? To cut federal dollars to universities allow these things to happen?
He desperately wants to say that he wants to just make laws against anti-Semitism. He just wants to make it illegal for you not to like Jews or to express that you don't like Jews. But that's not going to work. And ironically and humorously, it probably would be the worst thing they could possibly do. Because, of course, as the famous Goebbels quote says, when they make laws against hating Jews, that's usually the beginning of the end for the Jews. So it would be the stupidest thing for them to do. And I can't imagine that these, you know, giga-Jews like Greenblatt aren't well aware of that quote and the wisdom behind it. I think that's accurate. I think there's a number of reasons why. I think one such reason is just simply what we call the Streisand effect, right? If you make a law that says, thou shalt not be mean to Jews, what that means is that there's something to be mean about. So then people are going to go, wait a minute, why would I not like these Jews? So obviously people that don't already know, right? So then that means they're going to start looking into it, and they're going to start, wait a minute. I mean, people have not liked these fucking people for like 2,000 years? Wait a minute. You mean that like every fucking different culture and race on earth that has dealt with them has learned to dislike them? Whoa. You know what I mean? Eventually people start looking into it. And the people that already don't like them don't stop disliking them because there's a law. In the same way that people that like pot don't stop smoking pot just because it's illegal, right? Yeah, they might try it anyway, white supreme pizza. They might. They might. I mean, when it comes to strategic things like that, a lot of times they are pretty smart about it. A lot of times they're fucking dumb just by hubris alone. The chutzpah gets the best of them, right? And if they do it, it'll be a case of that. It'll be a case of the chutzpah getting the best of them. And before you know it, they'll overextend themselves And before you know it, they'll be in trouble. Right? So, one way or another, I don't think it's a thing that's under our control. I think it's actually ironically under their control. Because a lot of this anti-Jewish sentiment is largely reactionary. I don't think most people, set out upon the world to just hate on Jews or whatever. I think that they have experiences and learn things that they really don't like. And then once they've learned these things and understood these things, they then see the current events and things happening around them in the world, and they understand that these very things are caused by this very group. And slowly but surely, your collection of incidents that you know didn't have to happen or didn't have to go that way, but did because of their influence, starts to add up. And their collection of crimes that you see them commit as a group, using group power, starts to add up. You see, this is the kind of thing that I never hear very many other people talk about, almost nobody, and I'm sure they will now that I said it, but they have a lot of propaganda and a lot of things being like, collective punishment is wrong. Well, yeah, it's wrong if a collective wasn't used to do the crime. But in the same way that we have RICO statutes in the United States, where if you are an organized crime outfit and you're using the power of numbers, and there's many of you that are working in concert to do the crime, then you are punished as a group. The whole group is punished because the whole group was necessary to get the crime done, right? So in that same way, if they are using a coordination amongst their group, they're using their in-group understanding and network to do effectively a crime, start a war, push a vaccine. I don't know, this is a long list, right? Poison the environment. There's a million things, right? Steal from the entire populace, this kind of stuff. You can only do that using the power of a coordinated insular group. So if it requires that you use a group to achieve that effect, then the group has to be punished as a group. You can't go and say, oh, well, that's just individuals. No, if they were individuals, they couldn't get that done. You couldn't establish the Federal Reserve and seize control over our monetary policy and this sort of thing as an individual. That requires a coordinated effort. So eventually, that's how it's going to go with this stuff. Eventually, people are going to be tired, and eventually, the people that are responsible are going to be, hauled into court, basically. The problem is, I think that it's going to require something more than that, because first, you'd have to overhaul the courts, because the courts are then filled with Shlomo and Shlomo's buddies. So it's obviously, they're not going to prosecute their own in the same way. And as I brought up, I think, on the debate there on last Friday, there is one of their biggest sins is for you to rat out the other Jews to the goyim, right? It's called Mishnah, I think. Mishnah. I believe it's Mishnah. Nope, that's not it. What is it? Find out what it's called. All right, authorities. Okay. Mishira. Mesirah. 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 It's even got its own Wikipedia page. So what that means is, if they know that, let's say Greenblatt knows that one of his co-workers or co-ethnics committed a crime, he's not going to tell the police or the FBI or the whatever, because it's a Mishira or Mesira, or quote-unquote, it literally translates to hand over, to hand them over to the Gentile authorities, right? So this is like a code of silence. This is a omerta, as you say in the Italian mob, right? The Italian Cosa Nostra. It's like an internal rule that we don't tell the outside group about what we're doing. Yeah, it says, is the handover, is the action in which one Jew reports the conduct of another Jew to a non-rabbinic authority in a manner and under the circumstances forbidden by rabbinic law. This may not necessarily apply to reporting legitimate crimes to responsible authority, but it does apply to turning over a Jew to an abusive authority, or otherwise to a legitimate one who would punish the criminal in ways seen as excessive by the Jewish community. In any case, it, quote, excessive punishment by non-Jews may be permissible if a precept of the Torah has been violated. So here's the thing. They probably, as they often do, very much stretch the definition of what would constitute excessive punishment. Excessive to them is probably normal to us. And or that's how they're stretching it, right? And the other thing is, like, this applies to a lot of things. Like, when you're talking about their buddies that run, like, I don't know, say, like, a tax scam or a lot of things like that. They run a big financial scheme. And it would be the responsible thing to do. It would be the white thing to do for them to get in trouble for that. But they would need to be... The authorities would need to be told that happened for them to go down that way. Well, effectively, this leads to them hiding it for each other and concealing these various, like, financial crimes, for example. Yes, Sam Bankman-Fried. Oh, there's a whole lot of them. I think Devin Stack just did a whole one on one of these. He's done a bunch on these kind of characters. And there was in the one he did on, like, was that Saturday? There was this whole one about, like, this guy that he was doing exactly the sort of thing. He was running this sort of scam. It was basically a pyramid scam where they convinced Microsoft that they had this awesome product and, you know, got millions of dollars printed to them, basically, on that premise. And at the end of the day, there was no product. Microsoft wasn't going to buy their product. Or the product, you know, it was like some kind of digital jukebox or something. And they were telling everybody that, oh, you should give us all this money. You should invest, bro. You're going to be super duper rich, bro. It's going to 100x, bro. I swear, bro. Trust me, bro. And eventually what happened there is, yeah, Mooley, yeah, you saw it. Yeah, Mooley. So eventually, Mr. Mooley there, what happened is Microsoft wasn't going to buy their shit. Microsoft didn't want any part of it. Microsoft was like, why the fuck would we buy that? Like, are you kidding? When it was investigated, you know, they said, no, what are you talking about? We're not buying that shit. Are you crazy? So that is a part and parcel of this. That the only reason that can even happen is because of this rule. His co-ethnics cannot turn him in and say, hey, this guy is doing a bad thing. And supposedly, this rule, this in-group rule here, is so bad that this is like the ultimate sin to them. So it says, it continues here, it says the term for an individual who commits mesra is a moser, or mosur, a person who repeatedly violates this law by informing on his fellow Jews is considered subject to din moser, law of the informer, which is analogous to din rodif, in that both proscribe death for the offender, at least in theory. According to some, in some circumstances, the offender may be killed without warning, just like the mafia, right? Just like the mafia. If you go and rat on the other made men in the mafia and they find out, they're going to come without warning and pop you in the back of the fucking head while you're pulling out of the driveway. Well, same thing here. They can kill you without warning because you've broke the code of the criminal organization. Right? Same fucking thing. Now, the difference is, you know, the Cosa Nostra was not nearly as big as a deal as Hollywood would have you believe, because a lot of what they were doing was actually this group. It was actually them. The kosher Nostra was a lot bigger and a lot more nasty and violent. just savage, really. But these motherfuckers, the difference also is that they're massive. Like, the Cosa Nostra was not, by comparison to this, it's mountain to a molehill. This is the mountain. This spans the planet. This is a global secret criminal society with very legitimate facing fronts that the whole world regards as legitimate, but in the back room, there's all sorts of dirty dealings going on. But to the world, they're just fighting hate for good. Right? All right, I think that's a good ending place. It's almost 3:40 in the morning here, so we're going to go ahead and cut her off there. Right, so who knows? I mean, man, I have so much shit. I might even have to come back tomorrow morning. I don't even know. We might have to do it. I have so many stuffs I never even got to. Close that. We already did that. Beanerwood! Sounds gross. Sounds like a sex thing. Gross. Okay, we already did all these. Let's just get rid of those too. Okay. I think that's good. Probably. Yeah, you don't want to leave those, I remember. Okay, well, we'll end it there. All right, let me do thank yous. We'll get out of here. Yeah, I thought that was a good one, actually, American Life. I don't know when you showed up, but this one went pretty well. All right, okay. Let's do FTJ's first. Started going there first, actually, now. I don't think we did nothing on White Pill, did we? I'll remind everybody about that. That's funny. It's funny, Spy Hunter. I will remind everybody that the best way to support the show is either through FTJ or White Pilled, where we pay 0% middleman fees. There is no Jewing going on there. And I'll remind you that the way you do it on FTJ is identical to Odyssey. It's the same service. And White Pilled, I don't want to name it, but it's a mainstream service. So, just for the record, what's this thing? The hell? Froze. No, don't freeze. No. All right, let me just do thank yous then. This Huntress, Colonizer, Grindset, All Third Lawn, the big support there, and 14th Column. Big shout out to the FTJ people, FTJ crew there. Weez in the Juice. He says, "You're doing Odin's work, sir. May the blessings of Freya be upon you." I almost want to steal that from Nordic Frontier. See, that's a podcast I miss. That was a great one, you know, and it's unfortunate they don't do it anymore. I think that's a result of the fucking kosher DOJ calling them fucking terrorists, which is just a blatant lie. But it doesn't make any difference, right? That once they do that kind of a lie, good luck fighting back against that. Hopefully they get lawyers there in Norway and Sweden, and where they actually operate. I think they operate out of Sweden mostly, but I hope they get lawyers there in the Nordic countries and actually do sue the DOJ and say, "Hey, what the fuck is wrong with you? We're not doing any terrors, bro. Stop saying we do terrors and we don't do terrors." That would be a good result. But anyway, salute to you, Weez in the Juice. Do I have a Weez in the Juice one? Maybe I do. I don't know. See, I don't think I do. Wait, who did I need? I needed ones for 14th Column. I thought I did one for him. I could have sworn I did. And Weezin the Juice. I don't think I have a Weezin. Yeah, no Weezin. I have to add Weezin and 14th Column. All right. That's easy enough to do. All right. Weezin the Juice. Der Alte Fritz. Knight Rider. Miss Penelope, the very generous, and also a very generous Papa Smurf. Salute to you all. Thank you for supporting the show. You make it possible. Special thank you to Penelope for, saving us there, pushing us way over the top. Thank you for coming out. Always free to share the link with your friends. Let them know what's going on. Invite your friends. As long as they're cool, we don't want any psychos. We got plenty of psychos to deal with, but if they're good people, bring them on over. Bring them over to the party. Clip Encino Man for me? Wait, what? Encino Man? Like the Holly Shore movie? Wait, what? Encino Man. That's a blast from the past. That's a 90s reference, right? Wow. Okay. Well, then, in that case, we'll see you all tomorrow. Well, it's tomorrow, Wednesday. Yeah, so I think, yeah, okay, good. So tomorrow's Wednesday. I think for Thursday, probably won't do a regular show if War Strike is doing, because there's a lot of audience crossover. So I think I might do something different. Like, I wanted to try to see if I can kind of venture into these Twitter spaces a bit more, specifically hosting my own, because I've joined other people's, and, you know, it's been good, but I don't really get too much control over it. We tried a couple, and it was a little hard to stream it and do it, but I think I have a system, so I think what I'll do is I'll probably like make a Twitter space. I want to talk about the future of this whole thing. And I think I'll make it about that. And if you want to be a sincere person, you'll be allowed to talk about it. So I think we'll probably do a Twitter space then, and I'll stream it out as well. So I'll probably do that on Thursday. That way there is a stream, there's something to watch if you want to watch something here, but it won't be a whole, like, you know, produced show. I won't have to do all that, the normal prep work, which does take time, by the way. It's you do proper prep work, it's at least an hour to do it, minimum, more like an hour and a half, 2 hours. It doesn't include any other stuff, you know. But they already do a Twitter space. Who's they? Who's they? There's always Twitter spaces around. I don't know who they are, but there's always somebody doing Twitter spaces. But there's no – that's the good thing. It's like the user base of Twitter that's interested in this sort of stuff is so large that the whole, like, what other people are doing thing doesn't mean anything. The only reason – there was a discussion about this in a private group, and I was telling them that the times that people do stream and who they're streaming I don't want to say against, but, you know, at the same time as, consecutively with, that matters. And it shouldn't matter in a big venue like a YouTube. It wouldn't make any difference. It only matters because these platforms, like all of them, even Rumble, are still so small, and the user base that looks for this kind of content is so small that it does matter, you know. And the more shows go at the same time, the more that little pool of people gets split, you know. So it does matter. It's not to say what way it matters, but, you know, just saying in general it matters. I think I spelled Esther wrong on this thing, didn't I? It's like an H in there too, isn't it? Yeah, it's E-S-T-H-E-R. I put E-S-T-E-R. God damn it. Yeah, so I'm always doing this stuff in a hurry too, that it's like, you know, you drop a letter or something. Aha, there we go. Fixed at the last minute. But anyway, yeah, I think we'll do something like that. Oh, the 1488 radio thing is always on. That's not even – who cares? Like, you know, they'll do what they're doing. We're going to do what we're doing. They're not doing the same thing anyway. Like, you know, I'm not even worried about that. So, yeah, we'll just do that, I think. I'll just take a day off and do back work, which I got to do anyway. So we'll figure it out. Oh, shit. Rebel the Racist race car. Thought I had one for him, don't I? Oh, he's another one I got to make? Oh, shit. All right, cool. Well, Rebel. Salute to you, sir. He says, normalize burning crosses. He's got plans. Hey, man, like, that was pretty normal back in the day, you know? That was pretty normal back in the day. Yeah, that's the Klansman salute. It's not the O with the circle. It's not the circle with the arm. It's the hood with the arm, you see? It's the triangle with the arm. So if you want to do a Klansman salute, he's a triangle with the arm. But it was normal back in the day. It kind of goes back to what I was talking about, where, you know, we had in the past, like, all this stuff was normal. Like, I mean, not normal, you know what I mean? It was more common is the right word, not normal. It was more common. You know, I mean, shit, we watch all that stuff from these 80s, like, resistance groups and militias and stuff, and they're all, like, at some kind of connection to the Klan, and they're all burning crosses and shit, and it's just, like, way more standard fare than it is today. And there's a reason for that, as I think I read, I don't know, a couple of shows ago or something, maybe it was even yesterday, they've criminalized burning crosses. it's actually illegal to burn crosses now, because basically they say that it's a, what is it? They said it's something that's an active intimidation, where you doing that is scaring the poor Negroes who are terrified and just, you know, crawling in their skin at the sight of a burning cross. And therefore you're violating their civil rights or some such nonsense, you know? So, yeah. So that's why you probably don't see as much of it, because if people are burning a cross, it's probably done in a private ceremony. It's not just like, let's throw it up on the hillside of the fucking, you know, county or whatever anymore. Right. But, yeah, it used to be a lot more common than it is today. So, and that's probably the reason why, you know, people don't want to go to jail for burning a cross. So can't say I blame them. I think that was fairly recently. I think that was in the last decade or so. It was under Obama, maybe, right? What is that, Weezin? What is that? What is this thing here? Very descriptive with a bro. Oh, the Encino Man thing? Oh, I see. So that's where the name comes from, huh?
The beverage.
I see, bro. This is what put this place on the map. Oh.
What are you doing, Mrs. Stoney? No, you can't do this. You can't do this here.
No, please.
Look, Kashmir Rajneesh, why don't you just chill?
No, but still.
Link and I are cruising the mountain, bro, and we figure we's a little juice.
No,
chill. So that's where the name comes from, huh? Well, that's interesting. Veil of Shadow said, "Niggers are offended by their own shadow." Yeah, apparently so. Apparently so. That seems to be the case. Fourth King Column said, "Okay, burn a tree." Yeah, maybe that should be the new cross. Is it the tree? It's like, instead of, it's not a Christian thing anymore. Now it's in like an Odinist thing where you burn the tree. That's the other note on the burning crosses thing. Like, it was not, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure there was like a intimidating component, but it was more like, from what I understand, is the point was to like light up the symbol of like Jesus. It was like to they had a phrase. It was like light up, project the light of Christ across the countryside so that it could be seen from a distance. It was like announcing that there's militant Christians here, basically, and that was basically the real purpose of it. I don't think that is an understanding that most modern people have. I think most modern people have totally no idea that is what it's supposed to be about. But anywho, big thank you to supporters. Again, everybody, always free to share the links, invite friends. Always bring a friend. Friend are good. We like friend. All right. With that, we will see you all tomorrow. We'll come up with something else. I'm not even try like a new series. I don't want to overstrain the WN Founders thing, but probably put a pin in that for a minute, but I want to start another one. I want to have like a different one too. I want to have one, I think, on like revisionists. That's probably a good one. Like, there's a lot of good revisionists. The whole point of the Founder Series thing is because like people that show up to this stuff, they don't have a fucking clue who a lot of these people are. That included me when I first started looking into this stuff. So it's not uncommon. It's not like weird. It's just like, duh. Like, it's not like you're taught who these people are in school or something. You know, if you're showing them on the TV or something, it's always to villainize them as evil. So I felt like it's a good thing to have this resource where you can say, well, here's a list of these people. Here's a bunch of episodes telling you what they're about. And I think that's a good project. And a lot of people have given good feedback about it and like the idea. So we're definitely going to continue that one until we've covered at least all of the big figures in the history of it. But it's probably another few series I do want to kind of get into like that. I'm trying to think of what other ones, but we'll see. Anyway, I'm trying to investigate some more guests, and yeah, we'll see what happens. Anyway, with that, we'll see you soon. Take care of yourselves. Have a good rest of your week. We'll see you tomorrow night. Good night. Good night.
Breaking free from youthful roof, overlords tremble as dawn.